a question of the Honourable George on club commanders and their role in making sure these things happen. The second question that is outstanding is the question on vehicle counts. Third question that is outstanding is the question on the CFR and the renewals and the fact that there's no indication there. And the fourth one is the how did you determine the action times, given the fact that the Auditor General said that your books were, that they couldn't use your pockets, that's not reliable. So where did this figure come from? Can we immediately start with those, please? Which? Slide 75 as well, yeah. So can we start, please? Can we start, please?
Yes, yes, that is just a thing. We'll start with slide 75, if you are ready, General.
Thank you, General. On slide 75, the sectors that need recovery exacerbated by legislation, what we have found out is that when stolen vehicles are recovered in South Africa from other countries, it's very much easy to take those vehicles back to those countries because our legislation is very much well-crafted, it's clear in terms of possession of stolen vehicles. When it's come to especially our neighboring countries and our vehicles are being, stolen vehicles are being recovered as far as the Democratic Republic of Congo, our detectives go and recover vehicles there. What we find is that it's not easy because our legislation is not compatible. For instance, if we say to Mozambique this vehicle is a South African vehicle, is stolen in South Africa, the owner decides and produces papers to say, I did buy this vehicle. The result is that it is a very, very long, drawn process. We do recover and bring these vehicles back to South Africa, but it takes a long time. It's a process that takes even more than a year. And it is an issue which is being dealt with by our regional police, SARCO, our national commissioner, the minister as well. They're also attending to that issue. And we're hoping that this will become very much clearer because it's not us only as the South African police service that are having challenges. It's also the police services in our neighboring country.
Okay, well, Doctor, I have a question related to this. That one recovering stolen vehicles from foreigners, how many?
General, I think it was on the copper cable.
Okay.
There are not many foreigners that are involved in the theft of copper cable. We are arresting them. Of particular importance is that these are the people that are doing work on behalf of syndicates. And our DPCI is working on that. And I can safely say that in terms of the theft of copper and non-ferrous metal, the non-ferrous crime combating metal forum that are there at national and provincial level, that include all the stakeholders, Telkom, Eskom and so forth, are now starting to yield results. A very, very good arrest that are being made. Although this crime is still there, it is being dealt with. The industry has informed us that there is reduction in the theft of copper cable.
Let's continue to deal with the issue of platter commanders.
There is a need, Jefferson, for platter commanders. The reason for this structure is to have a capacity that will have oversight over the police stations. The role of the cluster commander is to go to the station, do inspections, check on issues like compliance, make sure that the station commander as well as the station personnel do what they are supposed to be doing. I know that it is currently a review of this structure to give it more power, because the structure is very much there. In other clusters, it's only the cluster commander as well as a few personnel. And the result is that with a cluster that consists of between 6 and sometimes 12 stations, especially in the Eastern Cape, which is more rural, that our cluster commanders are not having enough personnel to do this oversight functions. And there is currently a review to capacitate this environment. There is a need for this environment so that the stations can be inspected and there can be oversight over the stations.
If I can add to that, to say, if we are to achieve certain things, we need very strong, localized, organized leadership. And that lies between the cluster commander and the station commander and the deputy station commander. The cluster commander should not be, you know, the station commander should be, let's talk about a vision bifocality. The station commander should focus almost 100% on crime operationally in the environment where they are. The cluster commander is going to look at oversight, compliance issues of shared services among the stations that he's responsible for. It's a very, very critical structure, because there is no way that this provincial commissioner can be able to have a clear one-to-one relationship and one-to-one oversight role with a station that are sitting there. Because if you're sitting with 200 stations, there's no way that you can have a reporting line of 200 people. It will never work. It will not be effective. So one of the frontline reorganization and both that we're looking at is to ensure that we define clearly the role of the cluster commander, that it is clearly differentiated from the role of the station commander. The deputy station commander will be the one who's inward looking at administration, looking at registers, looking at all the things that internally things can happen. The station commander must be left to be out there, to meet with stakeholders, to look at crime and to work with people on the ground and make sure that things are happening. So I just want to support General Mukiva in the emphasis he's giving about the role of the cluster commander. And we have a task team that has been looking at it. We've taken the initial report in the refinement of this role, and we hope to report back in terms of how we are sharpening focus in terms of the review. Thank you.
Honourable George, you've got a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chair. You see, my first worry is the response of General Mukiva. He said the cluster commanders would work effectively, but they've got a problem that they need more staff. My question is, why didn't they give you more staff? I mean, if you plan the organization, you say you would need this, surely you would say this is what staff would be needed. Now, you see, the problem in General Mukiva at the moment, the perception even at the station commander level is that the clusters are just a useless irritation. Even the police, which were here, that is not the society, and that's the message of everybody, that you've got a number of decorated policemen who are effectively doing nothing. I'm not saying the intentions are not good, but as they are now, they are doing nothing.
Honourable Colin Bahat, you have a follow-up?
Yes, it does seem to me that we now have layer upon layer upon layer of oversight bodies. The Police Portfolio Committee, the inspector, the secretariat. Now you're saying, out of your mouth exactly, that the kind of commanders are there to do oversight and make sure they're doing their jobs. Well, that's what everybody else is trying to make sure they do. And when we get to stations, they're not doing it. So it is absolutely up to the station commanders, because they're not answering to the cluster commanders. They're ignoring. All the cluster commanders are ignoring the stations. But it seems to everyone that travels around and looks at the entities, that the cluster commander is just a spare body every now and again for Tea Party. Really? That is the general impression about they get a salary and they do nothing. So it's a huge concern. And you think, well, why are we actually using them to do a different job? Because this one is maybe not working. I'm very unhappy with the answer.
I also have a follow-up comment that I want to make on the answer, you see, because I am concerned that by this answer or comment that was made that they need more staff. Why didn't you think about it before you put up the command there, first of all? Secondly, we can't have another layer of management. What you need to do is writing the police is getting the managers who are the managers to do their work. And the fact of the matter is, cluster commanders, National Missionary, you shan't wait. Cluster commanders, can somebody remind me of the station in Limpopo, where the cluster commander was stationed in that station? It was the worst station we've ever visited. The worst station. So then he had a personal relationship with the station. He could do his work, he could do his oversight without any problem. He didn't even have to travel. That's where we found children locked up. That's where we found detainees who have been assaulted. That's where we found, in fact, the detainees were still bleeding when we got there. One of them came in bleeding. The other one was still bleeding inside the cells when we got there. And it seems to me that we've got to be careful now, because what we're doing is with the Provincial Commission, if you need to strengthen the office, you need to strengthen the Provincial Commissioner's office. You need to strengthen the inspectorate, which you are not doing, because there's no report on the inspectorate, even in the report. And we still need to see the results of what we have been told the inspectorate is going to do. There's no proof of that. What we need to see is a clear role definition of cluster commanders if we need it. Because otherwise they are going to become a post office.
Chairperson.
They are a post office.
Yes.
National Commissioner, I'll give you an opportunity. Are there any other comments that you want to make? You can respond to that. But can we keep also such as responses to the point?
I will be to the point, Chairperson. The model we are having in the police is not foreign to government. It is the model that the Education Department has. The Department of Education has regional offices purely because there is no way that the province can have a direct one-to-one relationship with schools. It is very crucial if we are to improve our frontline operational management and delivery for us to have a buster. It's got a very critical role. Because if we go to a cluster commander, and a cluster commander has 6 or 12 stations, our standardization aspirations in terms of delivery and operations is going to be delivered. The clarification of roles between the station commander and the cluster commander is very critical. The station commander has a very critical role of ensuring that they are out there where crime is happening and work with the people, the forces that are out there to do the work. But the cluster commander is there to make sure that when we look at an oversight, that is done by the secretariat, and operational oversight are two different things, if I put it. So the model that we're using is for large-scale organizations. It is a very, very important component. That it was ill-defined, that it wasn't doing what it's supposed to be doing, is not a reason to write it off. Give us an opportunity to define it. Give us an opportunity, Chair, to come back to you with those role descriptions. Give us an opportunity to make sure that we roll out the cluster model as it was intended. It may not have done what it was supposed to do, but we are saying who are going to make it do what it's supposed to do.
I've got another follow-up question on this. You claim success in terms of fighting crime. We have done that with, by your own admission, a defunct cluster command structure. Why then do we need a cluster command structure? What are the other benefits that we're going to see from a cluster commander? Now, I'm serious about this, because the fact of the matter is, as I said to you, you keep on saying that they've got this important role, etc., etc. I'll give you the example of Limpopo, that station, and now we can go back into our reports to find out which station it was. And it's not as it's an isolated case. It's not as an isolated case. All East. Cluster commanders sit inside the whole East station. I still have complaints about police officers involved in drug trafficking at that station. I still have.
Chairperson, we're not disputing the findings. We're here to be told about areas where we have to do continuous improvement. And part of it, we are saying to you, Chairperson, honorable members, that here are some of the solutions that we are going to invoke to ensure that we respond to the issues that have been raised. It is not our family, we're not coming here a perfect performance. We know we have challenges, and we know that we have to mitigate those challenges. And one of those challenges in terms of our organizing our structural operational delivery is what we are presenting. We're not coming here deputy angel. We are far from there. This is a journey, and part of it is to use this answer that we're having. Allow us the opportunity, allow us to come back, and we know the issues that are being raised, Chairperson.
But I'm asking you a bit of a question, National Commissioner. What is going to be the added benefits of having cluster commanders? The added benefits, because currently we have the results we have with ineffective cluster commanders. So what is going to be the added benefits that we are going to have? What is the performance measurement that we can see in order to support? Because now what you're saying is also financial implications. Because now suddenly we talk about more staff for the cluster commanders. We talk about vehicles. We talk about cell phones, we talk about office space, we talk about the daily running of that, we talk about fuel costs, but I can continue. So what are the added benefits and what is the cost that we are envisaging going forward on this model?
I'm not going to belabor much, but I want to make this clear to the National Commissioner and the General, the truth of the matter. That the cluster commanders are not functioning at the moment. That's a fact, which you have also acceded. And secondly, already we were talking about a top-heavy structure in the police service. You go to Pretoria, you see a number of policemen and women which were trained to arrest criminals sitting in offices. Big number. You go to provincial offices. A big number. Now it looks like we are gradually increasing a number of policemen and women who are not going to do the core business of the police. You see, because now you say you are going to beef up the structure, so you're going to have another layer under the provincial commission. I am tempted to say, if you believe that there is a weakness in the provincial offices, strengthen that. Don't create, you see, you're not sorry. You see, also, I'm already the National Commissioner, you talk about education. This is not education. This is false education. This is not education. This is a structure of men and women who must go and deal with the ruthless criminals, who must go and protect citizens of this country, who some of them can't protect themselves. It's not like a teacher wake up in the morning and tell what is 2 plus 2 when he actually knows what is 2 plus 2. Okay.
Chairperson, it sounds like we are talking about us bringing new people. We're not talking about bringing new people. We're talking about the refinement of roles of those who are already existing. We were here, Chairperson, yesterday listening to areas that have not been achieved. We can achieve those areas by reorganizing ourselves, reinvigorating ourselves. Particular functions, clarifying roles, doing certain things. We haven't spoken out, the cluster commanders are there, but to make them work we have to do certain things. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about sharpening focus, clarity of roles, ensuring that there is no duplication between the cluster commander and the station commander, so that we can use our people more effectively. And this is all what we are saying at this point in time. And to give support, maybe saying that there is additional administrative support that they have to be given. But we will work around the staff that we are having. We haven't come here to say we are appointing a new layer. We are refining, we are sharpening the layer that is existing and see the value of that layer. General, people have got to comment.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. We are currently having 1135 police stations. And these stations, in terms of the average, if you look at the provinces, we're having almost between 80 and 150 police stations per province. And the cluster commander is going to make sure that between the province as well as the station, there is management. We can have in Gauteng 151 police stations reporting to the province. And the National Commission is very much clear. Remember, in the past we used to have areas, and areas were disbanded. Then the clusters were formed. And when we started with the clusters, things were not going well. There are clusters that are doing very, very excellent work. There are clusters, Chairperson, where things are not going well. And these are the clusters that we are going to make sure that all the clusters must function well. The area that the National Commissioner is mentioning, the strengthening of the clusters, is exactly to say that level between the province and the station must deliver on its mandate. And this is what we are going to do, including that where the cluster is not performing, that there should be consequences. What is it going to take steps against those particular
clusters? But why do you need to change the structure and order to take steps?
We're not changing the structure, we're refining rooms. And we are sharpening focus of those rooms. And I'd like to tell you that because it's here, just to talk about some of the things that are doing in the program.
There was a question on this side, and it's not a dialogue between me and you. There's a question on this side from Honourable Mulati. And I will give you an opportunity to respond, but I should think that you say the outstanding question, then we want to move off on it. It's clear that we are not convinced about what is being said, and then we will make recommendations around it. Honourable Mulati.
Thank you, Jack. I heard the National Commissioner mentioning the Deputy Assistant Commander. Are they already in existence, or is it something that is still going to happen? Can you get time? Thank you.
Anybody else on the last comment on this? I want us to move on. My concern is National Commissioner. If you listen carefully, I want to know what is the word, deliver on their mandate. What is the mandate of class commanders? One sentence. That's the first thing. Second thing is, what I'm living, and that's what worries me, is first of all, at station level, management is not taking place the way it should. Therefore, we now are putting intervention at a higher level. We put in another structure. And they are going to see that those stations who are not functioning. The fact that you have, under the current circumstances, clusters that are working are telling me that you've got the wrong people in those positions. If you have the right people in the right positions, this will not happen. If you've got the right station commander at the station, you would not have a problem with these kinds of things. If you've got the right cluster commander where your cluster are working, why then is the next cluster not working? Is this a question, and that's what worries me about such, because we see it not only in level terms of cluster commanders, we see it everywhere. In terms of such, person X can't do the job. It's not performing well. Instead of addressing person X, we then create another structure that actually must do and intervene in what person X is doing. And instead of addressing person X, either by training person X or by removing person X because he's been or she's been placed wrong. And that is my concern. We can't keep on bloating. And as a commissioner, you say it was a role definition. That's not what Commissioner Mutiva said. He said we need to appoint more personnel for cluster commands. That's what he said. Which means we're going to take away staff from somewhere and put them there. I do think that we would have been safer with this discussion had you all stuck with what you said yesterday. We are re-looking and redefining the role of cluster commands. Once we know what we want, we will come back to you. And then we can have a discussion on it. Because quite frankly, what you are suggesting, what we are hearing, and even if you deny it, it will have serious financial implications. I can tell you now that it will have serious financial implications. Already we have a situation where there are cluster commanders with not adequate office space. So that's going to be the first thing that is going to be complained about. You give them additional cost, then the office space becomes even a bigger problem. So I really think, in order to be safe and to move forward on this thing, we've got to say, keep to what you said originally. We are reading this thing. We will come back to you in terms of the roles, the definitions, the responsibilities, because that's part of the problem. And the cost implications thereof. And please don't come back to us and say there will be no cost implications, because I will prove to you that there will be cost implications.
Chairperson, as a council and a head of that environment, the issues you're raising are very true. My intervention, I want to look at the structures that we have today in place to deliver on our remit and to deliver on our mandate. The second issue of raising is around whether we get actually the right people in the right places to do the job. Those aspects are mutually inclusive. And part of what we are reporting, what we are planning to do, is to ensure that there is continuous improvement in those intervention mechanisms. Our success, that's what the experts asked me to do. To say, once you are in that environment, ensure that there are strategies, ensure that there are factors that help you to achieve those strategies. And second, ensure that there are the right people. Those are mutually exclusive. And I am saying to this committee that what we are going to do is to ensure that through the structure of clusters, we're going to look at final role, ensuring that that structure does what it's supposed to do. Two, as you're saying, Heather said, it is incumbent on us to ensure that the right people in those places doing the job that they're supposed to be. And thirdly, if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, as General Mutiner says, our performance management and our consequence management system should kick in. That's all we're saying. It's just simple management, and we're saying we'll come back here to share with you how our reorganization and our boundary of those rules is turning out.
Members, I'm summarising this part of it with a recommendation that in our report we will make clear our concerns around what was said, and the recommendation that we are making is that we are worried about the bloating of the cluster command structures. We suggest that first they define clearly the roles and responsibilities, because National Commission, as much as you have the responsibility, as you now said to us, when once you appointed to look at the structure, we have a responsibility to look at the taxpayers' money is going to be useful and the services are going to deliver or not to deliver as a result of it. We first, request then in our recommendation that this comes back to this committee with a clear indication of the roles and responsibility of cluster commanders, the size of the offices, the financial implications, the performance measurements around cluster commanders. What are we going to measure that? The financial implications. And only then can perhaps go ahead and do it. Because in the end, we are responsible for what happens to the rank and scene of the taxpayer. Whether it is a lady in the street who is not paying tax like you and I are doing through SARS, but pays tax through the bread that he buys. Every single one of those things we are supposed to be looking after. So I think that is, we're not exclusive, National Commission, I'm summarizing. We're not exclusive in what we're saying, we're not excluding what you're saying. All we're saying is what we are requesting is that comes back to us before a final decision is my comment.
Question, Chair, because this cluster commander are there, do we wait and not do the work? Because all we're saying is we're defining roles of existing people in their perfect. And if I'm worried about the caveat that you say before we come back here, it's a serious inhibition in terms of our disputes, because we're using what we're heavy.
I think Chairperson, let me just come in, Chairperson, to the National Commissioner. I don't think the National Commissioner and the Chairperson, you are saying one the same thing, but on a different level. I think what National Commissioner Chairperson is saying, she's saying that whatever you want to do as a new thing of what you are already doing now, will you consult us as a committee? But she doesn't say that stop what you are doing, not do anything and come back to her. She's saying carry on in what you are doing, but if we are going to implement a new thing altogether, will you please approach this committee so that you will know exactly where we are. We are in the same level. That's my understanding.
The fact of the matter is, National Commissioner, whether if you're going to have new levels of people appointed under trust command, it's got financial implications. And therefore you've got to let Parliament know about it. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. And I don't care whether such likes that or not. That's our role and responsibility. And we've got to execute our role and responsibility as much as you have to execute yours. And we don't want to be confronted, and I'm warning us again, we don't want to be confronted with adjusted appropriation next year that is basically because of the new structure around class commands. That's what we are saying. We want to know about it because remember, as of now, we can actually change the budget. Okay, can we move on to the other questions, please?
And your response counts? And DFR renew us, how many?
Jefferson, on the response time, how we calculate it is that someone called the Central Blue Center or the police station, and then that the call executes the Central Blue Center is locked, and then the time starts kicking in. The particular call and it's relayed to a patrol vehicle which is outside. The patrol vehicle attend the complaint, and the patrol vehicle then give it back to say this is what we found. At the same time, the Federal One personnel will then record that on the system to say that complaint has been attended, this is what has happened. In terms of the AG's finding, the AG's concern was that this particular target could not be verified because some of the members did not have pocketbooks, or some of the pocketbook entries were differing with what is on the system. Chairperson, we, as visible policy, we met with the provincial commissioner, the national commissioner was also there, and we patiently brought it to the attention that this must not happen anymore. And in terms of the processes now, we are monitoring this on a monthly basis. Of particular importance is the issue of the pocketbooks and provincial commissioners. It's a letter which was written to them circular to say we must make sure that at station level the pocketbooks are being managed. Members make entries. If a pocketbook is full, that pocketbook must be filed properly so that when the Auditor General comes, the pocketbook is there. But of particular importance, the pocketbook and the care system, the crime administration system, must talk one and the same thing. What we find, Chairperson, amongst others also, is the fact that after a member has been given a complaint, while instead of him writing at the pocketbook, then another complaint comes in. But that is nothing they should do because you can always make and you can always make an entry on this particular issue. Thanks, Chairperson.
Let me follow up on this one. Can I ask the first one because it was my question, then I'll go to Honourable Kulabar Nott. You know, Commissioner Mutiva, with all due respect, the Central Port 1 Centre, specifically Midrand, had a problem in 2010. We all know. They have seen in a team, etc., etc. I can understand why the AG find this fine. But to make matters worse, if your ADLs was working properly, you could have used that to determine your times, because you would have been able to see when the vehicle left, when the vehicle arrived. So I don't buy the issue of the technical ones as basis on which we are determining the response time. If it is, then it's a very unreliable determination. Then the finding is absolutely correct.
Thank you. I'd like to know in your calculation, if you factor in the calls that are dropped, the calls that are not answered, and the calls have to be repeated because no action at all is taken. I've had all three experiences in my attempts to use the Tetrable one. I've had many people contacting me saying it's never answered. So why isn't it actually there? How much do we pay for it? it seems that the training of the people who answer the phone leaves a huge amount to be desired. What you're saying and what we're experiencing are not necessarily the same thing. So please tell me if those calls that are blocked, calls that are answered, calls that are attended to are factored into your calculation.
Honourable Chairperson, I think we're talking a different thing, because the AG's finding is based on those calls where a case should have been opened and the call was not opened. So my answer was based on that. On the question by the Honourable Member, in terms of the calls that are not dropped, the calls that are dropped, not answered and so forth, that is a different thing, and our system is able to give us that information. Last week Tuesday, I spent almost the whole day at Midrand, and I have seen the challenges there in terms of the system, the challenges in terms of the members, but also the challenge in terms of the calls where the community, the calls that can't reach the centre. When a member tries to answer, the call goes dead. I was sitting next to that particular call taker, and apparently it's a matter of people having cell phones where there are challenges with the network and so forth and so forth. But this is a matter that we want to address, especially where there is clarity in terms of the network. This is a problem that we want to address via improvement on our system. So that particular issue, Honorable Chairperson, we are attending to. Of particular importance as well is the challenges that our members are getting in terms of abusive calls, people that use the system to play, and immediately this type of thing means we are depriving a person with a genuine complaint to reach the centre. Thank you, Chairperson.
Could I have an answer to my question, which was, when the calls are dropped, and certainly nothing wrong with my cell phone on the areas I'm in when I call, when they're cut off or when the calls are not answered and people complain about it, I mean, when you do your response time calculation, do you factor those calls in or do you just ignore them because no van was involved?
We don't factor it, Chairperson. What is happening is, if you call, the call is dropped. You call again, it's a new call. It's not a continuation of that previous call. And like I'm saying, there are challenges on both sides. The first one is the network problem, people that are using cell phones, etc. And we know...
You're repeating now what you said before. The fact of the matter is you brought in, you said that the Honourable Kulabarnat is now referring to something else and that's not the finding of the Auditor General. You brought in the 10-4-1 because the original question was, how do you determine the response time? That was the original question. How did you determine it? And it becomes especially important if you look at your annual report, where in Mpumalanga we see an almost, an 8-minute drop. So how reliable is that 8-minute drop? How reliable, that's the point that we're making. How reliable is that 8-minute drop? How did you determine that 8-minute drop? And can you explain to us why Mpumalanga specifically has this huge drop? I mean, if it's true, it's welcome. But the problem is at this stage, you're not convincing us about the reliability. Because the Auditor General's got a finding on it, and we've been asking how you determine it, and you keep on saying 10-4-1. So, explain to us in the long overall.
Chairperson, the 10-4-1 is the only place where we can say that this is what has happened. We don't have, where there are stations that are not being served by 10-1 center, we will not be able to pick this thing up because then they're not having the necessary systems. In terms of the 10-1 centers, if there is a drop in a call, the person will have to call again. Of particular importance is that there is now, with the technology management system, initiative to look at the best available system in the world so that our systems can give us good and reliable information the chairperson is saying that can we rely on the Central Florence Center? As things stand now, the Central Florence Center is a system, is the one from which we are drawing our information. So the challenge in Mpumalanga, while we accept it, is something that we're busy working on, chairperson.
You're not answering the question. Explain to us Mpumalanga drop.
I'm not having the specific information on Mpumalanga, chairperson. You can check on that. And
on page 86 of your annual report, Commissioner Mutibo, page 86, Commissioner Mutibo, page 86 of the annual report, table 21, which if the other table comes in, table 22, the actual time for 2011-12 from Mpumalanga was 23:53. The new time is 15:04. Now, reaction time in respect to, I'm here, my glasses are not going to stay. In respect of Alcohol, Drug and Charlie complaints captured on the test system could not be verified as no systems are in place by steps to affirm the reliability.
Chairperson, there are two things that are at play here. The first one is the system on which we are drawing the information. The Auditor General wanted to verify that, and the verification is based on the pocketbook entry of the member in the absence of the AVL, Honorable Chairperson. So the system was saying this is a finding on the system. When the AG went to the pocketbook of the members, some of the members' pocketbooks were lost, some could not be accounted, some of the entries in the pocketbooks were differing with what is on the system. And what I've said, Jefferson, is we are now working in this financial year to rectify that. We made presentation to the provincial commissioner, all of them, and we said to them that we must address this particular situation. So we accept this finding. We do accept this finding, Chairperson.
Then it wasn't Paul. Then you should have said to us that that actually we should not pay too much attention to the times that you have in here. That's simple. You could have saved us a lot of time. But I'm worried. This has been a finding for the past, I don't know, at least 5-6 years. It's been a finding. The same finding. Yeah. Go and check. It's been a finding. Reliability. Well, at least since 2010. 2010, 2011, 2012, it's been a finding. 3 years, at least. How long have you been the Deputy National Commissioner for Bissau?
Chairperson, let me rectify. This has been a finding since 2011-12.
No, it's not. I'm sorry. I can go back and check for you, but I'm telling you now at least. We've got the stuff here.
11-12, Chairperson.
Okay, 11-12. And now you're starting to look at it.
We are addressing chapter now, there's a huge improvement.
And the year, there's no improvement, it's still a finding. The problem is that we get the feeling that SACS is doing with the AG's findings as they do with the committee's findings. It's an unnecessary nuisance. Continue with the next question, the renewals.
On the CFR renewals, General Luke will attend to that.
Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, in as far as the renewals for 2013-2014 are concerned, there is going to be 73,120 renewals for this financial year. No, I was saying in as far as the renewals for 2013-2014, it's going to be 73,120.
The year that you are reporting on?
Yes. And the renewal for 2012-2013
having 28,975.
How many of them have been finalized? Well, as of now, I am not sure of the number that have been finalized. But for the 2012-2013, those that have been finalized, it's 47,660, because some of them were received after, prior to the 1st of April 2012.
Jefferson, can I just come in here? In 2013, a total number of 49,046 licenses were liable for renewal, including 48,285 in terms of the license to possess firearm for self-defense. 2012-2013, a total number of 49,046 licenses were liable for renewal. And that includes 48,285 licenses to possess firearm for self-defense. The second category is 70 in terms of license to possess a restricted firearm for self-defense, and 691 in terms of license to possess a firearm for business purposes. It is very much clear that only 28,975 applications for renewal were received by the SAPS in 2012-2013. And then, Chairman, in terms of the number of applications received during 2012-2013, is 28,975. The number of applications finalized for that particular period is 47,660. And then applications finalized received during 1 April 2012 to 31 March 2013, Chairperson, 22,268, and applications finalized received prior to 1 April 2012 is 25,392, and that is license applications that are received that where there is overlap between two financial years, and applications are received towards the end of the financial year, and then they are finalized in the next financial year.
If there's any follow-up questions on this, there were supposed to be 49,000 overalls, according to what you said. You only received 28,000.
Yes, yes.
What are you doing about this? Because those people are now in possession of licenses that are not valid.
Two things, Chairperson. There are applications that we are busy dealing with, of people that have applied towards the end of the financial year, and those applications will be dealt with in this financial year, in this particular financial year, and that number we will make them available to the committee. The second issue, Chairperson, is the committee is aware that we are presently in a court action with an organization that wants to declare certain sections unconstitutional or even the whole act. We deal with that in terms of court action, and the interim court ruling of the judge was that the people that are in possession of the old Arms and Ammunition Act licenses, they are still valid until there is a ruling on that.
But Commissioner Mateo, I'm not talking about the old. I'm talking about the person who has applied, who has adhered to this act, the first applicants when the act came into being. You remember it was done third birth month. The first applicants on in that first year were up for renewal last year. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the people who are still in possession of old firearm licenses. You said by your own admission you received 28,000 renewals. You also said you were supposed to receive more than 70,000. I'm asking, what are you doing to follow up on the 40,000 plus that did not hear for? Honourable Kulabana, you also have a question on this.
Yes, just to fill us in on the issue, as I recall, the then head of firearm registry was removed. There were lots of issues. What was the situation there? Were people buying firearm licenses or not? Is it going to court? What is the status of that whole matter? And what has happened to the woman who was in charge for a short period? Is she still in the status? Is she being charged? You know, fill us in on the situation, because that in itself caused massive payoffs for many months. And in fact, I'm sure you'll have to go back and go over everything that was produced under her reign to see if in fact they're legal. So fill us in there, please. I see you're avoiding the topic.
No, I don't think that's fair. The question hasn't been asked. If we ask the question, we can't say that they avoided the topic. Continue, please.
Chairperson, on this particular issue of the head of the CFR, Rakhaja Mangwane, the DPCI started an investigation. We were informed about this investigation where the investigation was restricted to a company, a big company in Johannesburg, that is a firearm dealer. It was firstly on the import, as well as the export permits, but it was also on the license applications of certain people that were buying firearms from this particular company. What happened, Chairperson, is that from our side, we immediately instituted disciplinary steps. She was suspended. She's now under. She's now being charged disciplinary, and that is still on as I'm talking. On the issue of the licenses, the permits that have been issued as part of this fraudulent exercise, many of those were for import as well as exports. Point number one, we are now in a process to deal with this particular firearm dealer. In cooperation with our legal service, we want to close down this dealer for engaging in illegal activities for piping our members. I can also report to the committee that this Prakharia is not the only person that was disciplined, suspended. There is also a number of people that comes to about 90, of which some of them resigned when we served them with the intention to suspend. Some of them, they are presently under suspension, and their disciplinary procedures are in process, Chairperson.
Honourable Ndlovu, avoiding my question.
Chairperson, what is happening is, there are those applications for renewals that have been done towards the end of, especially in the last quarter of the past financial year. And as the chairperson can see, the number of renewals that we had to carry into the 2012-2013 financial year is quite a huge number. So there are those people that is not reflected here that they've renewed their firearms. They did put in their applications, especially in the last quarter of 2012-2013. Some of them have been finalized, and we will respond in terms of the technical details, all the details in writing to the committee.
What? I'll make that decision.
It's fine, Justice.
What is that number that you received?
We can get the deed for them. I'm not having with me now, Chairperson.
I don't think we're going to ask the question. You see, my concern is you keep on saying that you're not answering my question, because even if you have another 30,000 or another 40,000, it means that there are people who are not applying for renewals. My basic question is, what are you doing to address the renewals? Yeah.
Is also in the people that have applied for renewals, or for some reasons, it's not
they've been done. What is the status of their licenses now? So they've got firearms. They've applied for renewal. Now, because of the delays in your department, they are not able, they're not renewed. What is the status of their license?
Honorable George, we've written that legislation. So that person, as long as they've applied, they are legal. The problem is not theirs, the problem is the department's then. Honorable Ndlovu, you wanted to ask a question on this as well.
No. I wanted to find out if those Jefferson, through you, to the general, that those who have resigned, but we have done something wrong, what has happened to them? Are they being charged or what? Because I'm asking this question because some of the people do this, and then immediately when you serve them with a notice or something to discipline them, they resign. What do you do when they have already messed up the department and so on and so forth? What do you do with them? You just let them go. I just want to know that because there is a lot of people who have run away just through the back door.
Through you, Chair, on that one. I think there are two processes. There's an employer-employee relationship where when you still have a contract, I can do something. But if you resign, I cannot quit and discipline you when I don't have a relationship with you. So at any given time, the people that we're talking about, there'll be those that are charged for the misconduct point of view internally, and there will be a criminal process. So for all the people that we're talking about, there's a parallel criminal process taking place that is needed to every other citizen of the country. So even if they put the mat under our feet to leave us, so that we don't institute disciplinary on the criminal process continue.
Did our chairperson, any person who have wronged the department, and then immediately when he knows that he's going to die and resign, he runs away.
That's our labor law. That has coercion.
Can I ask that we work through the chair? Please. I mean, this still is an official meeting, even although we are outside of parliament.
No, I'm asking this chairperson because there are people who are doing it deliberately in order to survive. Department, and in order to make sure that the department is not functioning properly, and at the end of the day, you find that they resign immediately when they have that they are being fired or they are going to be fired. And then they resign today because they will be fired tomorrow, and then you can't get them.
But it's still criminally to ask them, and that's what the National Commission is saying. They are still criminally charging them. Even if they can't charge them internally with a disciplinary process, they're still criminally charging those people.
Therefore, Jefferson, that means the moral level has a number of those people that are criminally charged.
Or are going to be criminally charged.
Or are going to be criminally charged. Yeah. That's my question, therefore.
Yeah. And then I want to sort of this one, because we will give them...
Yeah, I wonder if you could fill us in. Last year, at the end of last year, it was revealed 27,000 police officers had failed their firearms proficiency test. The Safety and Security CETA spokesperson, Isabel Bowden, then said in January that only 3,353 applications for renewal have been received. It looked as though only 3,000 members have been declared competent out of that lot. So that meant there were huge numbers on the streets now without licenses. Now, what is the current status? I know that when...
I want you to ask that question, but it's actually a new question. So just hold it so that I can finish this round of questions and then we'll come to it. Because it's also interesting that this is not in the board.
Jefferson, in concluding your question on the those that have not renewed their firearms, we have written...
No, I said carry on. I'm with that part. Can we just please carry on? Because you have had six opportunities to answer that question. And now you want to say to me we've written... You could have said that in the first response. We will get your response in writing. Carry on with the rest that is outstanding, please.
Chairperson, then the next question that we are dealing with is the question of the palm. Vehicles identified and the insurance issue, I think the questions are on that.
Chairperson, the question was about a pound in Limpopo. There are presently in Modimolle pounds 104 vehicles.
Sorry. The question wasn't about the pound in Limpopo. That was the example used. The question was, how do you manage your pound? Because clearly we have a problem.
I'm coming to that, Chairperson.
So skip the rest of it. I'm not interested in what happened there yesterday. The fact of the matter is it happened. And you didn't know where the pound was yesterday. I'm grateful you now know where it was.
Yeah, I just said we got so many pounds. I did not know that. In terms of the process to clear the pounds, there are two processes that are at play. The pound is the storage facility. So at the pound, the vehicle is kept there for safe storage. Then we are having our vehicle investigation service. These are the people who are carrying the doggets. When a vehicle is brought to the pound, they will immediately run with the investigation. They will use primary as well as secondary verifiers to determine to whom does this vehicle belong to. In that process, they also work in cooperation with the insurance industry. The insurance industry has to assist them in tracing some of the vehicle owners. There is a very, very close working relationship. The vehicle insurance industry is having investigators, and our detectives are working on a daily basis with these investigators from the insurance companies to track the vehicle owners.
You know what? I'm getting frustrated, Commercial Commissioner. The question was, and I mean, you know, there's always these comments after these meetings about the committee not asking high-level questions. Now, the question was, everything that Commissioner Matiwa has now said, I said it yesterday, every single thing, insurance company involvement, etc., etc. The question was, fraud is happening at your pumps. What are you doing about it? How are you managing it? Please, I'm not going to waste time on it. You're going to give it to us in writing. There's still questions outstanding.
Okay, Chairperson, I thought those are the ones that I had. If there are ones that you've omitted, you can...
Honourable Kulabana, Honourable Namasi.
Thank you. If we can look then at the SAT competition.
Oh, sorry, Honourable Kulabana, thank you for the outstanding question. The Deputy Station Commanders.
Chairperson, I'm asking that if the question can please be repeated. I did not quite understand it.
The member asked, you referred to Deputy Station Commanders. Have they been appointed? Are they still going to be appointed? That was your question.
They have not been appointed yet, Chairperson. They are still going to be appointed.
Are there going to be financial implications in terms of these appointments?
Perhaps, Chairperson, where we should start is the Arab children, which you just talk about what we see as the role of them, and let me talk about my proposition, because we have a common baseline that cannot be shifted in terms of people who are 20. And I'm going to talk about the role, because I think it's important.
Thanks, General. The role of the station commander is, yes, I'll come to that.
Please. Focus on the question, the deputies. We know what station commanders are supposed to be doing. I don't want such to determine our agenda, but answer the questions that are asked. We've got limited time.
Chairperson, the deputy station commander is going to
oversee all the administrative functions in a station. Presently, the station commander is doing everything, is doing the support functions, is also doing the operational functions. He must visit, conduct operations, he must attend meetings at the province, and then he must come back, he must inspect the registers, he must visit the cells. All of those things are under the head of one person. What the deputy station commander will do, the deputy station commander's function will be to support the station commander by managing all the administrative functions in the station.
Speaking with the elephant, you have asked Chairperson whether there are going to be financial implications. First and foremost, let me say our baseline is very finite. And what we're looking at is to look at using the very existing people to be able to perform these additional rooms. If there would be a change, it probably could be a change in a notch or whatever we think that they are doing. We're not looking for extraordinarily new people going out there doing whatever. Reorganization of functions, that's what I've liked.
But even if it's a notch, there is a financial implication
within our baseline chairperson.
You see, my concern is if you say within our baseline, it also means now again we're then taking away from the lower ranks, and the possibility is national commissioner because your baseline is fixed. So can I just finish before you answer? The baseline is fixed, as you quite correctly say. So if we are going to have notch increases at that level, we're going to have less notch increases at the lower level.
This point, Chairperson, is that to the best of our ability, within the resources that we are given, we need to ensure that we organize delivery of the services in a most effective and efficient manner, and we'll try it all, but Chairperson, if I may say that you have this quality to do so.
Honourable Kulabana, if you had a question, Honourable Stuber, you have a question.
Yeah. Just clarity.
Deputy station commanders. I can understand in the big station, say for instance, I think that you need a deputy, but let's go to Kamus. Do we really need a deputy station commander in Kamus to do that job? I don't think it's necessary. I think we are wasting resources, because if you take somebody up, there's a void, you have to plug it with something else. And that's where the cost implication will come in. Thank you.
All right. Looking at training, I guess, it was reported last year that just 3,000 police officers had been trained and declared competent in the use of firearms. That was for the whole of 2012. Now you take that from a figure revealed that 27,000 had failed their proficiency test. Now that meant there were 24,000 officers are still not being declared competent to use firearms. Now at that stage, and at that current rate, it would have taken 8 years to ensure that 27,000 were all declared competent. Now that was if they passed, of course. So what is the status today? How many SAPS members do not have a competency certificate? And are they in possession of a firearm without a competency certificate? Have you disarmed them or not? And secondly, the situation with driver's licenses. Now that seems to soar every year. When I last heard it was 16,954 numbers, possibly more now, maybe less, I don't know, maybe you can fill me in. But I've never had a direct answer. If you are allowing people into the SAPs who do not have driver's licenses, and for some years exceptions have been made, do you have a limit of how many times they are trained at taxpayers' expense and fail a driver's license? Or do you give them 3 chances, 5 chances, 10 chances? It just seems like a hugely expensive exercise. If they are finally deemed to be incapable of passing a driver's test, are they dismissed from the SAPs? And if not, what do you do with them? Thank you.
I'm going to make those the last two three questions that need to be responded to. Then I want us to take a tea break, and then we come back and we discuss the grant status.
Chairperson, there was an issue around the need for deputy station commander, station size and whatever. We will take those things to account. Where it is not necessary, we will not do it. So part of this, managing that process, will take those aspects into account. And then there's the question around training issues, competency, driver's licenses. General Brekela is just organizing itself, and as she's doing some, perhaps one thing that I just want to throw in is that part of the numbers that we're dealing with here have to do with the transformational intervention of the South African Police Service. There are many other children who come from rural areas, come from environments where we can't blame them because of their situation for not having licenses. And when that decision was taken, it was incumbent on us to ensure that after training them, we must make sure that they get licenses. We cannot punish poor children from poor communities who we know parents would not even afford, even the village that they come from. They would not have driving schools and ability to pay for those. We still have to ensure that we are, in our transformational intervention, able to absorb some of those children. But we should ensure that our conditions of them being licensed are then given attention. A number of the children that we're dealing with here, I remember that we went to poor rural communities whose parents would never even afford it. They're not exposed to urban, you know, facilities as that we're having. And in our transformation intervention, we are bound, as I said, to ensure that we take care of this type of situations. General Mekin.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Jefferson, and members. I think in terms of firearm competency for the police act members, as of the 30th of September 2013, we stand at 87.42% in terms of firearm competency for the police act members. And I think when you take a total, a target, as of 30th September, we had 155,017 members, Fast Act members. And out of that, that is why I'm talking about the 87.42% firearm competence for those people. Then I'm talking about the operational person. I'm not talking about the support. I'm not talking about the management. The same criteria that we used under the driver's licenses to separate operational from support and management using the service allowance, we used it in order to come up with the separation of the operational. And out of that, it leaves us with 12.58% of the people in the operational environment who are not yet competent. But they are not yet competent only against the unit standard. Chairperson, I did indicate when I was here, or the committee, require that we separate them because we said in terms of the unit standard 12487, we talked about the three firearms, that people need to be competent in. We're talking about the handgun, we're talking about the R5, we're talking about the shotgun. And the requirement was that we separate, firearms. Now the 12.58, which I am reluctant to say not yet competent, but rather say not completed, because of the 16.386, that is the 12.5% operational members, 4,395 are competent in the handgun. And of the 16,386, the 12.58 operational members, 5,035 are competent in the rifle. Of the 16,386 operational members, 6,000
532 are competent in shotgun. Of the 16,386 operational members, 6,273 are competent in legal principles. Then of the 16,386 operational members, 6,218 do not possess any part of the unit standard. Those are the people that are not coming competent yet. The other chairperson, the numbers which are given, if you penetrate them, you'll find that they don't give you the 16,386 that I'm talking about. It's because you will get a person, some of the people being competent in two, the others being competent, in one, so the permutations go on, and on. But overall, the people who have not yet been declared competent, then they are still going through, some of them. It's 12.58%. The 87.42 in terms of operational members, those were declared competent.
Can I get a copy of that to the members, please?
Could I just ask a repeat of one figure, please? The 6,000 and something who have no, achieved nothing in any of the areas.
What?
The last figure you had. 6,000, and I didn't get enough.
6,280.
Do you have copies available, or okay. Can we get it distributed lobby? What do you think? Can you distribute it to members, please? Okay, members, is that it on this one? Can we then take a quiet, was there more?
Sorry, driver's license. Okay. With the driver's license, chairperson, the last time that that I was with the committee, I did indicate again that we have to separate them in terms of the operational. And at the end, I indicated that the number that did not have the driver's licenses for whatever reason, we might have allowed them to come, to come in, some of them do not have, was 10,352 operational. That is the group, chairperson, that we are currently working with, together with the SACITA, having put out a project plan in order to try and address that on a short-time basis. In terms of attending to that. But in terms of training them so that they become competent, and if they don't become competent, Chairperson, I think we did submit a response in writing. We were indicating that the training for a driver's license is not according to any NQF alignment or NQF requirement. As a result, people are afforded opportunities and opportunities in order for them to get the driver's license ultimately. So there is no person who is actually dismissed from the South African Police Service because the person does not possess the driver's license. However, when they are deployed, in terms of their work, they are deployed in bodies most of the time so that they can even complement one another in terms of the skills. So that work is not hampered. I think that's the answer that I can give to that effect. Thank you, Chairman.
Can we then, there's a follow-up question on that? Member satisfied, can we then take this 5-7 minutes past 11? Can we be back here 20 past 11? Tea, coffee, and then we start with steps.
Thank you. Okay. Thanks Thank you. Thank you.
Can we take our seat and start? We're now going to go into the crime stats that was not part of the annual report, but that we distributed yesterday to members. Can Ms. Jos, I want you to ask your first question, the one that you asked yesterday, so that we can take that and then we'll take some other questions. The stats. Figures.
Madam Chair, just before I do that, are we finished this bill?
Yes,
we've got. I thought you were going to give us a round because they have not told us about the pocketbook she mentioned at the time when I was talking.
Well, I think we've really exhausted the topic of the pocketbook story from the inspectorate right through. What we now want to see, and I want to remind staff that they are actually from some of your own documentation where you've acknowledged that this is a problem. What we want to see from our ongoing forward is an improvement in this. And not a finding, again, by the Auditor General. That's the bottom line. So can we go to the
My question, Madam Chair, I tried also to look at the tables used here, but those were some of them confusing. But the question I was asking is that there has been a very strong view, which was also put forward by ISS, that the department used the population figure of the earlier census, not the...
You've got it wrong. They used the new census data
for
this one and compared it with the previous census data of the previous years.
That's exactly what I saw there. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But what I'm saying, did they realize that the implications could be that they are would not be entirely correct because they are effectively comparing an apple with an orange.
The first question, any other question at this stage, Honourable Kulabana?
Yes, I think what has to be taken very seriously is that the ISS and many others are convinced that this actually was a massive miscalculation or intentional. Not sure, I haven't made up my own mind yet. But the figures are not something that our civilians in South Africa are going to accept. They are questionable. I've said on any occasion it is the equivalent of saying to a matriculant, here, mark your own paper. And so you are obviously wanting to put forward the best possible results. The ISS claims that the results are far worse than you released to us. And I know there were some claims that you were going to work through, perhaps that if a someone, I don't know that would be the ideal body, but somebody else would be involved. Now, of course, this goes to this whole business of doing it annually and keeping it such a secret. Is there any plan at all? We've had this from previous ministers that they were going to step up the releases to a number of times a year. But the obvious is to simply allow real-time crime stats to anybody who wants them at every station. Updated every 24 hours, easy enough to do. So, not sure why it is still this old-style keep a big secret and give us antiquated stats once a year. Are there any plans at all to modernize the system, allow real crime statistics access at every station for civilians so that they can protect themselves? They can go to their local station, they know there is a red Ford Fiesta, whatever car traveling the area, and when they come in there are housebreakers happening, for example. But giving us old data like this does not allow citizens to protect themselves. So is there anything in that? So there's two questions. One, the veracity of the stats, which is in question throughout the country. And two, where are you going with this? Is this going to be like in perpetuity, or are you looking for something more progressive to allow civilians to protect themselves?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm looking at table 9 on page 22. If you look at that table 9, it shows that there is an increase in car hijacking. But if you go down to the graph on a robbery, the residential increase is 69.8%. My worry is the Northern Cape, which is 125% high. If I can get an explanation, the last one is the table 10, robbery is the residential area increase again. Then if you go to the graph again, it shows that the increase is very high. Is that based on what Mr. Jett was asking? Or is it based on the actual figures now that you get from the reports every now and then from the station? Or is it the thumbs up one? Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank the first round of answers, then we'll take some more questions.
Jefferson, thank you very much for the opportunity to deal with these issues of fairness in this committee. When we released the latest crime statistics on 19 September 2013, some of the so-called analysts and experts said crime ratios are not important, and alleged that we are using them to conceal real crime situation in our country. They argued that we should rather focus on raw figures, which we had also provided. And let me indicate that raw figures will remain raw and will remain the same and haven't changed. They are the basis of calculation of everything that we are doing. It is now argued by the same analysts and experts that crime ratios are crucial. And remember, I said on the 90s, they said they are not important. But now they argue that crime ratios are crucial. And that population estimate, the population estimate we used for 2011-2012 ratios are wrong, outdated, incorrect. This is not true at all, because we don't count. We take the population estimates that were given by StatsSA. The false statements has also been interpreted by certain media houses to mean that crime statistics of the past two financial years cannot be trusted. A very sad, nuance. Such interpretation is equally untrue. The raw data, which is actual cases reported, is not based on population figures. It is arithmetic counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 against 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 the next year. And you cannot work percentages on the basis of raw to raw, because it must be a factor of a population ratio, must be expressed in that manner. Before I explain Let me just say that this is a serious academic debate that we find ourselves in, which unfortunately only serves to confuse letters and to confuse the nation. We have a particular approach, and the so-called experts and analysts also have probably their own approach. I will get back to that, you know, to read you an excerpt from our set of 2003-2004 to show you that nothing has changed. We do exactly what we've done before. We have a particular approach, as I've said. We don't agree on the approach, and there is no policy to guide either of us. We have a policy that we have used ad infinitum, and we continue to use it. In other words, in 10 years' time, the country could be subjected to the same debate, the same confusing debate, because perhaps what is confusing is that after we announced our last results, there was a new census that gave a new population baseline. And on the basis of that baseline, then the statistician then start making his estimates. That's the only thing that has changed. In the next 10 years, probably there will be this debate because there will be a new census, which will be a baseline for the statistician general to do new estimates. The 2011-12 crime ratio was based on a population estimate of 50.6 million. And that is an estimate that was given by the statistician general before the census. SSA released the 2011 census results in October 2012. It showed the actual population for 2011 after the census. The estimate that was given was 51.7 million. For us, it was not an effect because when we determined and announced our effect, we had to use the population estimate that was there. We would go back to the nation to say, 6 months later, this is what our new crisis are. Because that census decline wasn't there. It comes every 10 years. Based on the formula used by SSA, the restated estimate population for 2011, as I said, showed was then shown to be 51.6 million. But remember, I said it was in October, post-October 2011, and by that time we'd announced our state, based on the estimate that was informed by the old census. The argument is that we should have used this restated estimate figures is really a fallacy. This would have required us to adjust the crime set ratios of 2011-2012 post-factor. Based on our approach, this is not necessary. It is an academic exercise, I shall underscore and I shall say it over and over again. We should only apply the new population estimates, which are based on the 2011 census results from 2013-2012 onwards until a new census takes place. And you would hear that there wouldn't be any argument in terms of estimates going forward in the next 9 years because they would be based on the baseline of this census. So it is really on those bases that I want to say the debates that are raging are so real, factual, and really just serve to confuse the nation. I want to read an excerpt of the old census, but maybe before I do that, let me just take you to page 4 of the document that you are having, and I will go to the second paragraph to try and again just put forward our issue. We are saying in order to determine comparative percentage increases or decreases in statistics, we use two time periods. In this regard, it should be noted that the published ratio figures on the financial year 2011-2012, which were based on the published population estimates that I've already mentioned, which were applicable at the time of releasing the 2011-12 crime analysis have been relevantly compared with ratio figures of 2012-13 financial year that were based on the recently published population estimates. Having said so, I want to say, to go to page, if you go to page 45, you will see our raw figure remains the same. But you cannot compare raw figure to raw figure. You have to factor in the population estimate that you are given. And the second issue is that in order for us to be able to compare murder in Cape Town and murder in Mkanduli, internationally, the formula that is adopted is that 100,000 per population, because then that allows us to really compare area to area, the geographic dynamics are then contextualized within that international setup of population, whatever. So we've given you those issues. And I just now want to go to an excerpt that was given by Dr. Dikop in the annual report of 2003-2004. I drew it out just to show you that nothing has changed. When the current situation per crime rate per 100,000 of the population, it is as follows. The ratios of serious crime for 2003-2004 financial year are compared to those recorded in the previous financial year dating back to 1994-1995. He adopts the longitudinal approach. He adopts the year-to-year approach. Same principle, same approach. In this report, ratios, number of specific crimes per 100,000 of the population are used according to international practice. Population growth and differences in population size among different geographic entities are compensated for. Raw crime statistics and increases and decreases quantified as percentages. Based on these for South Africa, the 9 provinces and the 43 police areas respectively are provided on the SAPS website. All I'm saying is, and which I will make available if members would like it, all I'm saying is we've changed nothing. Even the people who are working on the statistics are the same people. Our statistician is the same statistician that was working with Dr. Diko. I am surprised that because he started that, things changed. And we start having different marriages. Nothing has changed. The raw figure has not changed. The raw figure is the same. The number that you are being given of 4.16 to say is the difference of murder. It's a straight line utilization of number to number, of raw figure to raw figure. You cannot do that. You need to add the population ratio in order to come to the 0.6. So I just want to say sincerely, Chairperson, from where we are sitting, we've changed nothing. We continue to present statistics the way we presented it. We are very surprised that there is this whole uproar, and we move from ratio, we move to population, but all we are saying is that it is the best way, the known way, the tested way of presenting statistics, and we shall continue to do so. And what we are also doing now, Chairperson, is to ensure that we work very closely with the Statistician General. We will be signing an MOU because we would like to bring even more integrity in our own statistics. We have a policy that we are developing, which when we have time, we'll come and present to the committee. But I just want to assure you guys and to assure the nation that SAPS did not do anything untoward. SAPS continues to do what they do. Yes, there are increases somewhere. Somewhere there are decreases. And we are ready to engage on those changes. That was my response to the first one. There are tables that we've been asked to deal with. Or maybe let me just say the veracity talks to what I have just said. The question of frequency of reporting the crime theft, but remember crime theft at this point in time are not our remit. We produce the theft, but the minister is the person who announces our statistics. There's an executive decision to issue the step once a year, and I'm sure that letter would have to be considered by the executive again. So the decision of cabinet, it is not our decision. Should they wish to change, we would oblige. That's all we can do as a service. whatever the decision of this government and its executive, we will comply as service. But I also want to say, again, you don't want to be confusing, sensationalizing, because the numbers would not be adjusted. Same as our financials. We'll produce our financials on a monthly basis for us to be able to know where our budget is sitting. But we produce our annual report once a year with proper auditing and relative adjustments. Nothing statistics, like CPI, not our level of financial statistics, are important for us to do so. Maybe, you know, we can look at, sharing internally, but in terms of external policy, that's not our needs. The executive has to guide us on it. And as I said, as those people who serve, we will comply. The issue of tables 9 and 10, Mentua, may I ask you to take table 9 and 10. There were questions around the one, the high percentages of Northern Cape. It's table 9. Table 9, car decking. What is that one? Okay. I think in terms of numbers, just Northern Cape, if I may say before the other people answer, you should always check, it starts from a very low base. If you look at it, you have 200% in some of instances. If you look at, for instance, the bank robberies, they'll say last year they had one, this year they had two, and it becomes 100%. Or last year they had one, and then they had two, it becomes a 100%. So I just want Menziwa to deal with the tables that you have mentioned. Yeah.
Honorable Chair, honorable members, on page 22 on the carjacking, the explanation there has to do with the increase in the raw figures from 9 in 2011-12 to 28 in 2012-13, which is now the interpretation that is sitting there at 200% increase.
But you're not stating the obvious.
I just want to know, if my understanding is right, this is a ratio per 100,000 people. Now in 2008-09 it was 0.6. There's roughly a million people in the Northern Cape, so that was 6 hijacks or car hijackings for that year in the province. And it's now 2.4 times million is 24 for the year. Am I right in my estimate or am I wrong?
Just going to have to change the H.
Members, any other questions? I will George. Switch on.
But I must warn the National Commissioner, ISD, because they're doing exactly what they are clear. You know, you can't think that you are a nation on your own. It's the police versus the whole nation. It does not work like that. You see, these people who are challenging these statistics, you call them, you dismiss them as academics and so on. But they are academics. They are not foreigners. They are South Africans. And unfortunately, the ordinary South African who cannot deal with these things of percentages, he or she depends on that. And my advice to you would be to find a way. This dismissal attitude I'm worried about is because your attitude, I'm not talking to you as a person, talking to your management, is very dismissive. It's a very, very... Your predecessors were like that. I remember when Jacob Lieber came here, changing the structures, units. He was dismissed. You think that he's the only person who knows what about... You might be in the forefront of crime, but many South Africans also. Are at the forefront of crime. In fact, they meet crime every day. So what I'm saying, Madam, is if all these people, you say, analysts and so on, in my view, you better talk to them. See, don't just dismiss them as if they are people who come from nowhere. Because the more you explain, the more one does not exactly get. If you were to be, let me make an example, Madam Chair, sorry. Dr. Berger was here. He put it in a very, very scientific, analytical way, where he comes to a point of 2.8 on matters. I would have expected you, if your system is beyond reproach, that you would do the same approach, so that an ordinary citizen in Tofiwa is able to understand. That's all I wanted to say, Madam Chair.
Do you miss any other questions? Honourable Lord.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let us go to Table 17, Graph 17. Let us read the paragraph underneath that graph. Specifically, if you are looking at the last line of the paragraph, during the current voting year, the crime has reduced by the marginally of 0.6%. And the main contributors to this reduction are Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, Gauteng. The highest increase were recorded in KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape.
I think it's important through the Chairperson that we deal with the constraints after we have dealt with this all. Because I wanted to understand now. Page 23. Yeah. I wanted to understand now what we are talking about, non-residential increase. Non-residential areas. Now, I think it was timing to do this, to talk about the figures after the rest of, because maybe the visibility of police in these areas will play a role. That's why I'm asking these questions. How can we solve this problem? I don't know the debate, but how can we solve this problem, which is put down here as the reasons that to go up. How can we solve it? I don't know the debate, a sophisticated debate, but a problem of looking in the future way of solving the problem. How can we solve it?
I know that just some of the answers, but I didn't get an answer to the suggestion, not only by me, but by others. I'm quite uncomfortable with being referred to as so-called experts. I mean, someone like Dr. Berger's been in the facts for many years and studied for many years. He certainly doesn't refer to the National Police Commission as the so-called National Police Commissioner, because she's only been on for a year. So please, it's not to insult them. I'd like an answer to the question made about the possibility of the country being allowed access to real-time crime statistics at their local station. I mean, these statistics belong to the people, not to SAS, because it reflects their injuries and their pain and their death.
National Commissioner, I think we need to put this thing in perspective as well. And I want us actually to get away from the debate on the crime stats. None of us sitting here, including your management, are statisticians. Commissioner Menzel is not a statistician either. The fact of the matter is, if we simply find this issue, the debate is not about how such has arrived at this year's crime stats. Not at all. That's not the debate. The debate is the comparison of this year's crime stats to the other years. And I'm tempted to walk to that board and put it in very simple terms. And I think we need to understand that, because then I think the Honourable George's point is a valid point about engagement with these people, so that there's a better understanding of what is said. Because they're not criticising how you arrive at this year's statistics, they're criticising the comparison. That's what they're doing. Members, will you allow me just to do that?
You have a population of people.
It's basically the argument around the dependent and the variables. That's the argument. And I really think, you know, instead of us all getting booked up around this situation, what we should do is try and actually meet one another and sort it out. Because in the end, for us, it's important that we look at the statistics, that we talk about what does that need in order to mature where we saw increases, that the increases come down, that we acknowledge where there are decreases. Those are the issues that we should be talking about, rather than the how we arrive at that.
Chairperson, thank you very much for that illustration. As I said in my opening remarks, indeed, both of us, there is no policy that guides us commonly. It's an approach matter. All we are saying is that experts we've followed a particular approach over the years. And while I was reading, for instance, what Dr. Dikoff did in 2003 and 2004, it again was to show the consistency to say, this is the approach we have adopted, and again, we just didn't pick it up. We look at other countries today, how are other countries calculating and extrapolating their statistics? I hear you, Chairperson, indeed, we'll reach out and talk to the other people. It is not a dictation exercise. They should also understand. We would be engaging, we would be trying to understand where they are coming. And I am very, sorry if I have come across as arrogant. I am not arrogant. I was just stating a fact.
our thinking, where we are coming from, and as I said, you know, on many aspects, not just statistics. We will engage with stakeholders, we will talk to stakeholders, whether it's visible policing, because we can never police this country alone. And where there are misunderstanding, chairperson, indeed we will reach out so that we understand this misconception. We can take from ourselves to say this is what is happening. It's just that what has happened is that perhaps as commentators, there's a lot of high ground that has been taken, and when you are not able to respond at that point in time, and it's on TV, it brings out a completely different message. We are willing to engage, and I'm sure we will, on your advice, on our intention, reach out and engage with those people who are having different views with us. Thank you, Dr.
Maybe can we then move off this one and go into stats? I, for instance, I am seriously want to know, in terms of the sexual offences, the stagnation, what are we doing to improve that situation? That's my first question. My second question is around the murder rate. I'm looking at table 3 on page 12, and I'm specifically looking at the Free State and at KwaZulu-Natal, where there's quite an increase. Sorry, I'm not going to go over it, because we've got to ask some questions.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. You can respond to it. Can I ask you to respond to those that you
have? It's in terms of the increase in KwaZulu-Natal and the Free State, which is clearly very high in terms of sexual offences. No, I'm talking about three murders now.
Okay.
Clearly, if you look at the percentage increase also, those that are quite high, what are we doing to address that problem? How are we making sure that KwaZulu-Natal and the Free State this year are not those contributors? Because that is where your responsibility lies. The academic and the philosophical debate around the statistics is important, but in the end we need to address these issues. And then Honourable Ndlovu, question which is similar to mine, but on another ground as well.
Chairperson, we've dealt with tables 9 and 10 for Honourable Member Ndlovu. That's where we are. Okay. Let's start and let's use tables 9 and 10. Tables 9 and 10. And then the second one is around, and I'd like Major General to say, what are we going to do with the stagnation of sexual offences? What is it that we are doing to up our game? The initiatives we're wanting to undertake to improve our performance. It's not on numbers, it's the initiatives. What are we doing to change the situation? Visible policing and ops, the issues around what is it that we're going to do to focus on pre-state and cases and to ensure that we reduce those matters that are there, because it's a concern just to increase the rate. And also perhaps if you could share some of the drivers that we have identified that we have to mitigate. We mentioned some of them earlier on around the shipping, the drugs, all those type of issues. What are we going to do with those? Okay. Alright. Maybe are you ready with your line and check? Okay. Let's start with Major General Busilin then. Let's see with the stagnation of sexual offences. What are we doing?
Thank you, General. Thank you, Chairperson, Madam Chairperson. From the detective side, what we are doing continuously is that we are trying our utmost best to increase our detection rate by conducting detection operations at least twice a month nationally. And also, we are intensifying our awareness campaigns with the community. We are visiting the churches to sensitize the community as to how to assist us in order to improve our performance. I think.
Let him put on to these questions if we take the follow-up. Keep it, please. Because, I mean, that is really a very wide statement, and I think that's the Honourable Member's question as well. But you're not saying anything, with all due respect. Leave that to us. We're very good at it. To speak for 15 minutes and not say anything. From you, we want what you are going to, specifics.
Jefferson, in terms of the measures for the Free State and KwaZulu-Natal, SAPS have done analysis of the causes of these murders, the modus operandi, when are these crimes being committed, where, what type of instruments are being used. Jefferson, liquor remains the main cause of crime.
I'm sorry, I want to interrupt you because I've heard this thing now 3 or 4 times. The term the drug issue. People didn't start drinking last year. They didn't start using drugs last year. It's been a problem all along.
Gentlemen, there is increase in the use and abuse of liquor in this country. The fact of particular importance is the fact that there are social economic conditions that are at play here. If you then look at the times when these crimes are being committed, especially over the weekend, in the evening, people are working away from shebeens, and they are walking on foot, they are not in vehicles, and then people become vulnerable. Of particular importance also is the fights that are being picked up by people in these shebeens. A small thing happened in a shebeen. It results in someone losing his life, and I don't believe that was the original intention by this liquor. Liquor is there for people to socialize, and we're picking increasingly that the quarrels that happen in the shebeens result in this fight, and then people kill one another. There is a research that was done, especially in the Mangaung area, by the Free State Provincial Police, that they have shown the spread of shebeens within that particular area, that they have demonstrated even where you will get the shebeen where there should not be a shebeen. We are now engaging the liquor board in terms of the issuing of liquor licenses to places where there shouldn't be one. A particular important chairperson, we are on the committee that is set by GTI. GTI is not having a database within the liquor board of how many shebeens are there in the country. And we ask our provincial head of visible policing. We don't, the liquor board does not know how many licenses are they issuing. And this is where, Chairperson, we are having this problem that we are raiding the shebeens, we are closing the illegal shebeens down, and next week they operate again. You might close a shebeen many times and tomorrow it is operating. And it's not from a small shebeen. We include small shebeens, very small, and a big one. Again, in the Mangaung area, the use of knives, it is very much prevalent. And that is why we have confiscated many knives, especially in the Mangaung area. If a person goes to KwaZulu-Natal,
Commissioner, I want you to focus on what SAPS is going to do. You've now said just one thing that you are going to do is you're in engagements with the liquor boards. That's the one thing. So let's focus on what you're going to do. We know how people get ill.
Okay, Chairperson. The second issue, especially in the Free State, but this is something that I think by the end of this year we might have done, is the launch of the provincial crime prevention strategies. And this strategy that are being driven by provincial government. There is one that was already launched in the Free State. The National Commissioner was there and is led by the Premier of the Free State. We have launched another one in the Northern Cape, and we would want that all the provinces have these strategies because we need a multidisciplinary approach to deal with crime. While the police are dealing with the crime in terms of visible, proactive as well as reactive policing, there are issues of by law enforcement. Some of these liquor outlets are at places where they should not be. Then there are also the spouter shops that mushroom all over the country. The enforcement of bylaws, especially the spouter shops by foreigners, by illegal foreigners, it is mushrooming, and they are targeted because they don't have opening time, they don't have closing time until in the early hours of the morning they are operating. The person who are also intensifying police action that is get as a recovery of illegal firearms. There are so many illegal firearms that are in operation, including the homemade weapons that are being used in crime. Especially in certain parts of KwaZulu-Natal, we are recovering lots of firearms. In the past financial year, if a person look at the three categories of police-generated crime, legal possession of firearms is the one where the police have made tremendous strides in good improvements in it. Again, Chairperson, the involvement of the community is very much important. It's very much important. We are involving our communities. The CPFs are on board. There is sharing of crime stats at CPF meetings. At every CPF meeting, our station commander or someone that works with the crime from the Crime Information Analysis Center will present the crime and say, this is crime that has happened either over the previous month or the previous week, whatever period they will meet in. Then task can take place to say who are the people that we are looking at, and the community is informed, and there are concerted efforts to arrest those people. Chairperson, if I can also quickly go back to the sexual offences. This is one area that remains stable. And the most important thing about the sexual crime is the involvement of families in this particular crime, where either the uncle or another relative will commit this crime on a known person in the house. The mother might leave the child with someone that she trusts, and when she comes back, she found that this thing has happened. We are certain waiting with NGOs in this regard. There are very, very reputable NGOs that we are working with to prevent this crime. A particularly important chairperson is, if a person look also, where are these crimes being committed, especially the sexual crimes, they are taking place in those informal settlements, in under those circumstances where you find that this is a house, there's only one room, is the mother and the father and the children that are sleeping in one. And those conditions, and I know that the government is busy dealing with them. But of particular importance is the fact that they are continuously being a challenge in terms of this crime being committed where these people know one another. Thank you, Chair President.
Honourable George, Honourable
Global,
and Honourable
Lebotsi,
in that order.
Madam Chair, this is one of the most important topics, which I thought the police approach would be different. You see, if you were to bring South Africans, poor South Africans from the township, and place them here and listen to what General Motive say, they go home saying, well, it means we are on our own. Police already given up. Because, you know, General Motive, probably, I don't know what you study, social development. Society develops. You're not going to find a situation where liquor is going to be reduced in this country, or liquor consumption is going to be reduced. As years go by, there's going to be more liquor consumption. What you as the police must do is to develop, as they develop new tricks, like criminals don't study, they develop new tricks. But you must also stay, I know you can't stay ahead of them, but you must make sure that you develop steps to be equipped to be behind it so that you can be able to check. I thought you were going to say this is, for instance, one of the things we are not talking about, which many people all over the world believe is one of the deterrents in bringing levels of crimes, special correct crimes, is visible policing. See, this excuse that it's like a sexual crime. This excuse that is done, we know that. But it's visible policing. You know, we were in South Pole one time. The visible policing, they act on it. You go out the shop, there's a policeman standing at night. Go to this corner, there's a policeman. I thought you were going to come here and tell us what is it that we can do, especially to reduce, especially these two crimes which you have talked about. And I've not heard you talking about any except to give reasons why there are these crimes, there's liquor. We know that. There's going to be liquor more. Probably by the time you finish it.
Can I ask you to get to the point, please, on
the board? No, what I'm saying, Madam Chair, can we get what is it that the police can do so which could give hope that police understand the problem? These are the efforts they're going to bring levels of special matter and sexual offences down.
On the board,
Jefferson, he turned to spoke about the bylaws. Bylaws which are should be looked after by the local government. Don't you have a forum where you meet with the local people, local leadership, in order to make sure? You talked about shebeens who are built in their own areas, who are not supposed to be. You talked about trade and industry, not having statistics of how many shebeens are there and so on and so forth. Don't you have people who are focusing on those things that you are talking about, those who are part and parcel of those committees? When they take decisions, they are part and parcel of those decisions. Because what we are talking about, we are looking at a preventative here. We are not blaming you, we are not blaming the people, but by looking at preventatives of what should happen in future. Is it not better that in all these committees, where they decide that they are going to open a spaza shop here, they are going to open a shebeen here, and so on and so forth, those people who give those powers, don't you have a contact with them? Or specifically if you are talking with DTI, have a contact with them, sit down with them, and make sure that you make your way forward. Because at the end of the day, they may get the license for what they are giving them a business, but at the end of the day, it's your headache. Now, would you think about that, those lines, in order to prevent them not to have a shebeen next to the school, I'm just making an example, next to the church or next to something else, something like that, and shebeen must be closed at 11 o'clock or whatever, and so on and so forth. Something like that, so that you know exactly that you are doing a preventative action than to act. That would be my input on this matter.
Honourable Mulabasi, thank you, Chair. Mine is on the legal covenant. You see a situation where they trade for throughout the night, which causes a danger for the community. Are they not supposed to be having trading hours that should be monitored? Thank you.
Now, I also have a question I want to ask. I mean, I'm sharing the concern of members in terms of that we're not coming clear in terms of strategies, what we are going to do. So my concern is, and the Honourable Law is quite correct, I used to lead a ministerial task team on child pornography. And for years, we have struggled to get SAPS to sign an MOU with the Film and Publication Board on the prevention of child pornography and how are you going to work together in terms of that. For years. Now, this is something solidly that could have impacted on sexual offences and crimes committed against children. But SAPS, very true in nature, unfortunately, was not interested to do this. And I mean, the MOU was ready, and it wasn't the FPB that was the problem. It was SAPS that kept on not coming to the party, not signing it, while it's in their interest to do so. And I'm using that as an example. I don't want the response on it. I'm just using this example, and that's where the Honourable Bull's point comes in as well. The other issue is National Commissioner. There is, in the question that the Honourable Mulabathi is asking, and the Honourable George, many of this has got to do with proactive policing, and not after-the-fact policing. Why do we wait for a murder to happen in a shebeen or a club? You know, when this shebeen is going up,
it acts well. I mean, luckily, SAS is, well, maybe we should get SAS involved as Shabins, then it will take forever to finalize them and then we won't have a problem. But it takes a while for Shabin to get up. At any point in time, your sector should be passing by that premises where they are busy setting up this Shabin. Do they ever get out of their vehicle, go to that premise and say, not in a confrontational way, what are you building here? Yes, Shabin, can we see your license for this? And close it down before it even starts. Yeah, but I mean, if it's an illegal Shabin, I'm talking now about the illegal ones. They don't pick up at night. They're not there the one morning you're sleeping, the next morning they're there. Where is the proactive policing in terms of that? And I think the National Commission, a lot of it is also to do with crime intelligence. And I'm not even talking about crime intelligence at that level. I'm talking about intelligence at station level. I'm talking about informants at station level. And we'll ask that question when we get to the text. Those are the proactive things, the simple things that can be done. And that's the basis of sector policing. That's the basis of sector policing. Knowing your area, knowing what is happening that shouldn't be happening, having a relationship with the community in such a way that I know somebody is building here that shouldn't be building here. And that is, I think, what we're lacking. We're not seeing those kinds of initiatives. We're not seeing that direction that we're taking, and that worries us. Secondly, I think part of the problem that we're going to continuously having National Commissioner is the impact that systems have on policing. That we talked about yesterday in terms of the IT environment. And I do want to say, National Commissioner, that we didn't even touch on that yesterday, but as a committee, no, I'm not going to speak on behalf of the committee. I myself am also worried about the use of systems that are there, the effective use of systems that are there. For instance, don't want to embarrass anybody or anything, but I wonder if I take the people responsible at this level for the Central Firearm to the Central Firearm Register, and I ask them to divorce the 6 minute from that system, whether they would be able to do so. Because they don't understand the system. And if we don't understand the systems that are there, how do we know how best to utilize the systems? With all shortcomings that the systems might have, you know, it's the same as the station commander. You might not have enough vehicles, but you've also got to know how best to use the vehicles that you do have. And these are the things that I think on a higher level are a concern that we need to look at. Your opportunity to respond.
Chairperson, thank you very much for a lot of the issues that are raised. I think they add on to some of the things that we're starting to work on. If you look at page 14, we've tried to say at a high level, here are some of the things that we would like to include in dealing with the issues that you're raising. Just on page 13, the map that you see there, if I can ask you to move there, we show, for instance, the proliferation of this illegal or the shipping. And what you see there are legal ones. It's not illegal ones. That right corner that you see there, where there's a concentration, is just in Bloemfontein, in Mangaung itself. So you can see that if you were to factor in the illegal ones, the situation becomes a little bit dire. And consider the fact that we are tail-end interventionists as a police. Our work deals with what is flowing out of the pipeline. So the next picture on page 14 shows you something that was built out of knives that were collected in Tabong Alu, to say these are the knives that we collected at the Shepins and in our roadblocks and all that. And that's the picture that you're seeing there to show that we continue to collect and continue to do other things, and some of the things that I tell you. What we're saying there, we're saying, you know, we're looking more for involved participation with key stakeholders in a process of issuing legal license. when we were in Free State, for instance, and they were launching their provincial crime combating strategy, we had a presentation coming from the liquor board president, because it's all stakeholders, the province is a platform for stakeholders to come in there. What is very clear, apparent, is that what they do is not even being communicated to the city itself, least to ourselves. And we were saying, if we have to combat some of these things, part of that evolved participation, joint participation, becomes very important, because we can talk to each other to say, it's not just about issuing a license, it's about doing certain things. When we were doing public order policing in Mangaung during the conference that was taking place there, you know, there is somebody who has this license in the main street from the airport to the city. It would block the entire traffic of the city once people come start coming there to come and drink, to wash their cars and everything. And what the traffic officer and the police are doing starts told me, which is not what we want, because we need to have sex with the municipality, ourselves, and those that are issuing licenses to say, you know what, there's a problem with that type of license. And they will be operating until hours on end. We are saying rigorous enforcement of municipal bylaws is a serious weak point, not just for this area, for many other areas. We are hearing about the children using drugs because they have them accessible. The units that are taking those drugs are near the schools. Churches, you know, normal social life, churches are no longer able to have the normal churches because there is something that is making gumba that is making noise there. So we're saying it's a weak area. We need to engage as partners. You know, police will do the enforcement, but right from a planning point of view, we need all of us in this pipeline to work together. Continued confiscation of liquor. I visited recently the warehouses of Western Cape. I don't know if members have ever visited those. If you have an opportunity, go and visit those warehouses. They are massive and they are packed to capacity, and we destroy. They are packed to capacity. The cost of just washing the liquor that we collect from Kayelita, Langa and all that. I mean, I looked at those warehouses and our gates, they are huge hangers, huge, double size, big, and packed to capacity. It just shows you that if we don't work together, even around issues of licensing, confiscation, and whatever, we would continue to spend more money instead of getting people to and want to chase the criminals. They are there to watch the loot that is taken from people, and the disposal costs are humongous, and we have to carry those. The reorganization of shifts is the other thing that we are looking at to start saying, the police that we are having, we need to engage with our labor unions to start saying, look, our commitment is to ensure that they serve their 40 hours. It doesn't matter when the 40 hours come, whether they have to be fitted over the weekend or whatever, because right now we see that our shifts are problematic. We have most police during the week, peak times in terms of crime over the weekend. We don't have the many police that we are looking for. So those are some of the things that we're looking at to reorganize the shift management system to ensure that strategic deployment that follows the analysis of crime, peak and frequencies at all stations take place in all those areas. And reducing visible policing constraints, which we've already spoken to in terms of public order, we need to ensure that we have dedication for public order so that our police can be released to be there, to be visible. We take note of some of the suggestions that have been given. We'll put that list in terms of ensuring that you know, we have more interventions that we are focusing on. And we appreciate the inputs, and we shall continue to appreciate those from various stakeholders yourself and others that are willing to help. And sector policing, indeed, Chairperson, will do a note. Local intelligence, station intelligence, it's also very critical to assist us to do whatever and to get us our work in that space. Thank you, Chairman.
Minister, are there any more questions on this? I have just two more, if I may, if there's nothing more. The first National Commissioner, it is accepted that attempted murder rates are a far better indicator of violent crimes within a society, rather than the murder rate. The murder rate is only those that succeeded, but the attempted murders are obviously bigger. And that shows quite an increase. doing around that issue? I'm asking that question because for me it is also the reason why I asked the question around the renewal of firearms, the fact that only 28 firearms, you know, those are all things that are contributing factors, and if we don't control what we have, and I mean that's why for this committee it's also an issue that tax contributes to a possible 2,000 plus 10% of the illegal firearms that you found last year, in terms of those that are not stolen from such members. What are we doing? How are we going to deal with that situation? And then also, is Prevention Commissioner Lamour here or not? Is left. Okay, now I just wanted to find out whether the gang violence in the Western Cape, and to what extent does the gang violence in the Western Cape contributed this to the murder rate increase in the West Cape? And then the increase in the trio crimes obviously is of concern. And I think we are interested in the measures that you're going, even though it might be marginal at this much, we don't want to see a situation where it increases even further. Because in the past few years it's been going down. How are we making sure that we turn around that situation? The trio crimes.
Chairperson, on the, let me just, General Philip right here, General Lamour is not here. On the issue of the murder rate in this area, most of it comes from your Lanza, your Khayelitsha, those type of areas, where we are not having much of the gangsterism. So it's other drivers in terms of that, because when we were doing comparisons, you would remember Mr. King, looking at the murder rates of this area. Most of it, the capital of you know, a lot of it is someday even called the capital of murder in this area. So we have to look at the number of issues that are coming from that area. And a lot of confiscations of alcohol come from those areas. The example that I gave when I opened to say just last week, they say there was a thief in a shebeen. Somebody poured beer on the other one, went home, and when he came back, there was all of warfare. How many people died? 4 or 5, just this week. And in a shebeen, and it's a minor thief. So those things are serious drivers of murder. But we would go back and look at those type of issues. We would ask the Western Cape to look at that, because I know they are doing a number of further, you know, drill down studies to look at what else needs to be done. They mentioned, for instance, where they are looking at collaboration with the municipality. If you look at lighting, for instance, in some of those areas, water stations, some of the people die in the morning, and those type of issues would not be on the police side, but when we collaborate and talk with each other, we would be able to say, you know what, maybe you can assist us if you put high mass 2 or 3 here. It may reduce a little bit, but it won't take away all those things. And I'd like General Mutiba, General Sole, and the detectives, if they are able to throw in some response to the questions that have been asked.
I want the detectives first to stay off. We'll get to this.
Okay.
So can we continue with
happiness?
General, you just switch off your microphone. General Sitoli wants to start first. Who wants to start? General Sitoli?
Yes, thank you very much, Captain. I wanted to start with the question that the chairperson raised on the attempted murders. One of the weapons that is common for them to use is the knife, because it wants to compare to the level of the firearm. I think in that particular area we're going to continue with knife-free campaigns in which we collect those particular knives. But at the same time, we're also looking at the legislation part, so that we can also deal more with dangerous weapons on that particular side. Then there's also firearms that are contributing. One of the focus operations that we will be embarking on is the firearm tracing operations, where we'll be focusing specifically on the confiscation of firearms. Then on the other part, there's also societal dynamics that contribute towards this, and that's where our multidisciplinary collaboration comes in with all the art disciplines and civil society at large, and we're going to continue with community education and awareness and focusing more on the vulnerable communities. Then at a level of local government, what General Motiva has explained as the rollout of the provincial crime prevention strategy, we're going to define the local crime prevention frameworks. And what we're targeting there, it's assisting municipalities to design community safety plans. Within those particular community safety plans, we will continuously attend to environmental design factors which might be creating these particular opportunities. But this also includes a question that was also raised by with regard to the committees that we need to have there. So within the local crime prevention framework, we have provision for multi-agency forums. Those multi-agency forums, they are including police, other government departments at that particular level, local government, municipalities, and civil society. And then that is where we will be engaging on issues that should remove opportunities at that level. And we are continuing with the creation of safer cities and safer streets. Under the creation of safer streets, we also intend to introduce a new concept, a street crime forum. And the street crime forum will be focusing on clearing the streets. Then with regard to clear crimes, we are improving on the partnership strategy, which is rising on the direction of the National Commission. And one of our focus on trio crimes, we've already started with Stabric, and we are also going to have a broader stakeholder meeting that is driven between ourselves and Stabric, so that we focus on enhancing partnership in fighting this particular trio crimes within the Stabric environment. But over and above that, as a police, then we increase our combating strategy, focusing on the both geographical approach as well as organized crime approach. Thank you.
Thank you. You want to add something?
I think the general control has covered a large area. I wanted to touch on the domino effect in terms of the attempted murder. That it starts as a street quarrel. Sometimes it becomes an assault common. Sometimes it escalates, becomes an assault serious, and then sometimes it goes to be an attempted murder. We are concentrating on the crime generators, as General Storm has said. So I will not repeat what he has said. Thank you, Chairman.
Is there any outstanding question now? I think we've covered them all. Is there anybody else still wants to ask a question? I do think that the underlying message here is, Mr. Commissioner, that we see it as a red light. But let's be nice. We see it as an amber light, the fact that there are increases. And our concern is that we must make sure that we don't lose the progress that we have made over the past few years, that we don't turn around in the wrong direction. We plead with us to embark on partnerships, and not in a dictatorial way, manner, like they normally tend to do. You don't know everything about everything. There are actually people that can assist you. And if you go and there's partnerships between different departments, allow those departments also on their fields to take the lead. I think that is part of the challenge we've in the past had, or complaints we've had around such and the approach to it. For instance, I'm glad the National Commissioner mentioned the issue of lighting. It is a problem. It's not only a problem in Longong Kailicha, it's a problem that we have everywhere. As much as the fact that
dwellings are not numbered, and the streets are in a terrible condition, which takes them so much longer for the police to get to the point where the crime has been committed, or are in progress. You can't find the place. How do you get to the place? And every minute wasted is a minute that could have saved their lives. So we do need to have partners in terms of local government, etc. But we also need to be led by the knowledge that they have. For instance, one of the challenges that we have in our informal settlements is exactly the fact that they've got high mast lighting. Because it doesn't light the street where the people are walking. It gives a general lighting, but it's not giving the fact in that it's something that in 1995-6 that was highlighted, that we, after the government put up these high mast lightings, but it's not giving security to the person who's walking the street because it's not giving adequate lighting while you are walking. So we also need to look at, well, it sounds silly, but we need to look at those kind of issues as well. We need to roll out where we know there is a need for it. These mobile crime scene, I know there's these small finger trailers that you got. We need to roll out. We need to make sure that our longer, our private shelves, our thing because do have those things available, that they can use it. I think those are the things that we are pleading with. Let's make sure that those things are in place, that we don't come here and we blame it only on municipality. We agree with you. It is a contributing factor. We know it. We agree that drug use is a contributing factor. But the members are also correct. We're not going to see a stop in the use of liquor. It's most probably going to increase as our people are empowered, as people are desperate. It's both sides of the coin, unfortunately, contributing it. And we need to do, as police, more visibly for the people to see. That's where the sector policing comes in again and this book comes in. If we know people tend to leave a Shebeen on Saturday evening at 1 o'clock, why don't we have vehicles driving the street at that point in time at 10 kilometers an hour? Just making sure that people are okay as they go. It's those things that will contribute, also to our people saying that the police really do care about us. They do care. They hear when we go, we've been outside because we don't have vehicles. They're not discriminating against us. They hear. They're walking. You know, at campuses, they do that with the students. Sometimes on a motorcycle or something. They do that. Let's do the same. Let's show the people that they care. I think also coupled with this is that violence breeds violence. And that's where discipline, Commissioner Sithole, in your environment, with your members, comes in play as well. Our police must also lead by example, and that way we've got the rogue police officers who are not doing that, we need to act against them strongly and without fair favour. Members, we're going to break for lunch. When we get back, we're going to start with detectives. You don't want lunch. Is it busy? It's 1 o'clock. It should be ready. I just want to find out that I sent the committee secretary almost 20 minutes ago to find out. We did want to find out venue and everything in terms of lunch, and then we'll break. Can we be back for it to 2? We're actually not bad in terms of timing. So, and we had lots of engagements with the detectives, so it's not going to be the same intensive. No. Why? Okay. Members, I've just been told that lunch will only be ready at 1:30, but can we take a comfort break at least? I think we've all been sitting for quite a while. So we'll take a comfort break of 10 minutes, 15 minutes. How long are you going to need in terms of your presentation on detectives? 30 minutes.
You see, I was thinking whether it would break for 10 minutes, come back, even if we then go to lunch 5 minutes later, I'll still give you 45 minutes, then we can have the presentation, come back and we can do questions. Okay. Break, it's 5 to 1, we'll be back here at 5 past 1.
It's not lunch. It's not the break.
Mini break.
Have you been to everyone?
No.
I haven't been to any of everyone until 7 o'clock. So the questions and answers that I've been taking out since 10 o'clock, I think it's been the response to the other presentation, right?
Yeah.
So let me work at this for the different day. And it says that we're still 3 years old. Well, 6:30.
Okay.
4:30, yeah. So, I mean, and I mean, the public parliament we can't say late if you want to know. So, yeah, I'm just going to finish the course of security. But then, do you have to be here for the, well, like, members of Congress tomorrow morning?
Well, I say that I can't do tomorrow, so I'll probably put another monitor
on tomorrow. Yes, you know, you don't know what I'm talking to in the nation. Talk to the guy.
Oh, but he wasn't here.
Yeah. Like you said you go on Thursdays and Fridays.
Yeah. So you don't have to be there. We're doing our proposals for your thesis. We want to use that at the end of the year. And I'm just thinking about the other day,
Because I'm going to do next year. But I'm still quite panicked
about it.
Yeah. So yours is unique and he wants you to
choose.
It's the end of this year.
You can choose.
You can choose, okay.
So far, he's the only person I've met that tries to choose.
Because I think he wants to work with CSAP. Yeah. I think he's getting tired of academics.
Yeah.
And everyone keeps asking,
are you
going to
do your PhD after
this? So do you want to become an academic?
No,
He's a younger guy, he's sitting here with a denim blazer.
Yeah.
He's the researcher for this
committee.
Both of them are researchers for this committee.
But, yeah. It's a business degree, so I've studied for a while. I'm not really focused on a specific area, like solution or
implement. But you said Oxford, though. because I choose not to. I'm like four. I won't be able to. I'm the only of them. First of all, the client found the report. Which is difficult in South Africa because we don't have like a, we don't have like US funding, like a lot of groups don't have particular funding.
No, like I really would want to be involved, but I never want to be involved in what style of politics in general, right?
It's also not as, a lot of the people, if you are neutral with the, if you don't know what happens on the egg, you know, where you're going to go.
Same
thing on the political consultant, yeah. So like they have various clients who have various objectives, and what we need to do is we need to align the objectives with current legislation and not include the legislation.
Minutes, can we stop? We're now going to deal with the SEGAFs and the Hawks, and National Commissioner, I want to make it quite clear. You were referring yesterday to legal requirements in terms of drafting an annual report. I want to make it quite clear that we have requested last year that we start dealing with Hawks at an additional program, even though they were not at that stage, that they report separately. I want to make it clear that the Act requires that. From now on forward, next year, we will not print your annual report if the Hawks is not treated as a separate program. That is what the Act requires. Last year we asked already, but for some or other very sinister reason, it wasn't adhered to. Yes, because the people around you were there in the meeting, the National Commissioner. We asked that it be done and it wasn't done. So there's got to be, I would be very interested if it's not a sinister reason what the reason is. Unless you tell me that the Commissioner Dramat is not able to write the report. She said yes, Commissioner. No, we're not asking for, and I must make it clear. Before we get to a situation again where you give an addendum, you refer to addendum in the annual report that we don't get. So please, I want to make it very, very, very clear. This addendum of the crime stats that you refer to in the report but that we don't get. What we want next year, it can be in this report, but it's got to be a separate program. As you deal with detectives, as you deal with this whole sector. This is the last year that we will accept it this way. We're already unhappy in accepting it this way. So can we continue with the presentation, please?
Chair President, thank you very much. And all those directives are well noted. Please, as old ladies and gentlemen, don't embarrass me next year. Okay. Chair President, I ask you to introduce this presentation, and then we continue. Oh, no, I'm wrong. You are not going to do that in the second part. Then I guess let's deal with the money issues. Sorry, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, we start off with the program purpose, objective, and then also look at the different sub-programs in this regard. Firstly, the purpose of this program, Detective Service. The purpose is to enable the investigative look of the South African Police Service, including providing support to investigators in terms of the forensic evidence and the criminal record center. The strategic objective, to contribute to the successful prosecution of crime by investigating, gathering and analyzing evidence, thereby increasing the detection rate of priority crime. Very important strategic objective, actually with a specific aim included in there. The Detective Services Program comprises of the following four sub-programs. Firstly, crime investigations. I will speak with crime investigations. I'm not going to general detectives. Secondly, specialized investigations, criminal record center and then forensic science laboratory. Now, if we look in at the following slide, and we've already referred to the program as a whole, we look at the four sub-programs. Firstly, crime investigations, which had 8.5 billion, expended 8.9 billion, therefore there was some shift within in order to make provision for an increase in compensation where pressures were experienced and then all the machinery and equipment. Secondly, there was the criminal record sector where there was 1.699 billion 1.582 billion was expended, expenditure level of 93.1%, mainly as the result, as we all know, of CGS expenditure. Then also the forensic science laboratory, which had an under expenditure of 94.9%, nearly as the result of CGS expenditure again. And then there was the specialized investigations, DTCI, 1.226 billion, of which 1.210 billion was expended, a slight under expenditure in terms mainly of the goods and services, because their capital was on target. So all in all, crime investigations over at 104.5, CRC 93.1 as a result of CJS, FSL 94.9 as a result of CJS, and then specialized investigations at 98.7, a little bit under on goods and services. This on all, Madam Chairperson, is a sub-program, a well-resourced sub-program, a well-resourced program in terms of the functions as well as the funds in this regard, and over years have actually grown quite significantly in this regard. May I then ask the next presenter to take on the performance information in this regard. Thank you.
Just as soon as we go to the performance information, let me introduce the management agendas for the actual performance side of things. So the Lieutenant General Ramat, who is the National Head of GPTA, if you can just raise your hand. Major General P.J. Arendt from GPTA, and the Lieutenant Philip Lassen. Thank you very much. From the Detective Service, we have Lieutenant General Moon, who is the Divisional Commissioner for the Environment, and Major General Johnson for the Environment. And from Forensic Services, we have Lieutenant General Patani, who is the Divisional Commissioner, and Major General Sheffy for the Environment, and Brigadier L.A. Greg. Okay, and then under Detectives, I have also omitted Major General Gutile, who is responsible for ICS. Thank you very much, Chair. Can I ask you, General Spiller, to introduce, and then we move on to this.
Yeah, thanks, National Commissioner. Thank you, Chairperson. Our presentation on crime detection is going to be led by General Mon. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chief Honorable Members. I will start with the strategic objectives, which is to contribute to the successful prosecution of crime by investigating, gathering, and analyzing evidence, thereby increasing the detection rate for priority crimes. The performance indicator will be detection rate for serious crime. I will deal with the planned targets, actual performance, deviations, and commence. The target for the 2012-13 financial year was a detection rate of 55%, which is 1,066,859 cases. The actual performance of 2013 was 54.19%, which is a variance of 0.81%. We did not meet the target. But Madam Chair, if we look at the raw figures, 1,145,978 cases were detected, which was more than what was set out in terms of the raw figures. Percentage of court-ready case dockets for serious crimes. The planned target was 36.84%, which is 165,829 cases. The actual performance was 61.31%, which is 369,204 cases. The deviation would be at plus 24.47%. The other target was achieved, Madam Chair. The conviction rate for serious crimes, the planned target was 88.51%, which is 312,208 cases. The actual performance was 88.24%, which is 352,513 cases. The deviation was 0.26%. The actual target was not achieved in terms of percent, but managed the target in terms of the raw figure. More cases were finalized in court during the year. The detection rate for contact crime, the planned target for the detection rate was 60%, which is 406,621 cases. The actual achievement was 62.09%, which is 434,409 cases. The deviation was plus 2.09%. Here the target was achieved, Madam Chair. Percentage of court ready cases, dockets or contact rounds. The planned target was 37.24%, which is 74,112 cases. The actual achievement was 61.83%, which is 142,305 cases. The deviation was a plus 24.59%. The target here was achieved, Madam Chair. The conviction rate for contact crimes, the planned target was 75.34%, which is 81,019 cases. The actual achievement was 79.60%, which is 92,022 cases. The deviation was a plus 4.26%. The target year was achieved, Madam Chair. Detection rate for trail crimes, the planned target was 23%, which is 11,671. The actual performance was 23.02%, which is 12,658 cases. The deviation will be plus 0.02%. The target was achieved as well, Madam Chair. The percentage of court ready case dockets for trail crimes, the planned target was 43.74%, which is 5,108 cases. The actual performance was 67.06%, which is 11,069 cases. The deviation was plus 23.32%. The target was achieved as well, the MHA. The conviction rate for trail crimes, the planned target was 71.02%, which is 1,825 cases. The actual achievement was 71.66%, which is 3,146 cases. The deviation was plus 0.64%. The target year as well was achieved, Madam Chair. The detection rate of crime against women 18 years and above, murder, attempted murder, all sexual offences, common assault and assault, GBH. The planned target was 72.5%, Madam Chair, which is 161,518 cases. The actual achievement was 68.47%, which is 151,115 cases. The deviation was a minus 4.03%. The target was not achieved here, Madam Chair. The percentage of court-ready case doctors crime against women 18 years and above, murder, attempted murder, all sexual offences, common assault and assault, GBH. The planned target was 39.85%, which is 28,284 cases. The actual achievement was 61.72%, which is 43,443 cases. The deviation was plus 21.87%. The target was achieved on this indicator, Madam Chair. The conviction rate of crime against women 18 years and above, the planned target was 73.51%, which is 29,869 cases. The actual performance was 83.18%, which is 32,457 cases. The deviation was plus 9.67%. The target year as well was achieved, Madam Chair. The detection rate for crime against children under 18, murder, attempted murder, all sexual offences, common assault, and assault GBH. Detection rate was to be maintained at 77.42%, Madam Chair. The actual performance was 70.94%. The target was not achieved by 6.48%, Madam Chair. The percentage of court-ready case office for crime against children under 18 years, the planned target was 5.66%, which is 13,054 cases. The actual performance was 58.05%, which is 21,400 cases. The deviation was plus 32.39%.
Sorry, the figures there and the figures you're reading are not correlating. I'm picking it up a few slides back already.
Let's check us.
told you yesterday, when I enter a subsurface store, I walk to the drugs.
It's the same energy. Thank you, Anuja. The conviction rate for crime against children 18 years and under, the plan target was 70.54%. The actual performance was 75.98%, which is 9,814 cases. The deviation was plus 5.44%. Thank you. Madam Chair, the major achievements, if you look at the life sentences, there were 826 life sentences meted out during the financial year. 499 of these life sentences were from the SCS environment. 1,588 subjects were convicted to 20 years and more life sentences, 20 years and more sentences. Detective court case officers were placed at 438 members at 109 courts, with 142 members at 118 courts. There was an increase. 72 forensic social workers were appointed. 602 missing persons were traced and 45 suspects arrested with the assistance of the Bureau for Missing Persons. Persons circulated as wanted on the database have decreased from 208,844 to 177,757, a decrease of 31,087. Joint operations were conducted with Lesotho, and 187 vehicles from South Africa were identified and repatriated to South Africa. An additional 182 vehicles were identified and awaiting the Lesotho Mounted Police for authorization to have them repatriated. Items with a value of 3,387,947 grams were confiscated, and 240 persons arrested as a result of information provided by the public to the Crime Stop Call Center. But in fact, the targets that were not achieved were already reflected in that presentation. The interventions and finalization of the crime detection strategy we're busy with, the establishment of a national crime combating forum and national crime evaluation centers to ensure integrated approaches to prevention and detection of crime, conducting and linking research to modus operandi and well organized criminal resources and criminal enabled infrastructure, advanced multilateral cooperation and alignment of legislation in region and beyond on detecting transnational crime, implement early warning systems including monthly accountability sessions to improve detective performance management, enhance case docket analysis capabilities at police station level, leverage on intelligence, forensics and IT to apprehend suspects including tracing and tracking, enhance the organized transcript analysis capability to inform targeted interventions to increase detection of serious crimes, intensify community education initiatives on reporting crimes and non-withdrawals, particularly crime against women and children. I thank you, Madam Chair, honourable members.
I suggest over lunch you look at what I've said, because I will prove to you that the figures that you've read and the figures in your presentation are completely different figures. Not much. Sometimes as much as 2,000, sometimes as little as 300. And come back after lunch and give us an explanation why again we have one figure you're reading, one in the annual report and one in the presentation. Continue, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honourable members, of the presenting on the DPCI Specialized Investigation. Still top program of programs. The strategic objective is to contribute to the successful prosecution of crime by investigating, gathering and analyzing evidence, thereby increasing the detection rate for priority crime.
the performance indicator, the percentage of already case targets for fraud and corruption for individuals within the JCPS cluster. The 2011-12 achievement was 35.4%. The planned target for the previous financial year was 3% increase on the baseline. The actual achievement was 63.46%. So we exceeded the target by 27%. Next indicator is the detection rate for serious commercial crime related charges. The achievement in 2011-12 was 65.2%. The planned target was for 50%. The actual achievement was 86.1%. The target was exceeded by 53.1%. The next indicator percentage of quarterly case dockets for serious commercial related charges. The 2011-12 achievement was 50%. The planned target was 30% quarterly cases. The actual achievement was 56.5. The target was exceeded by 56.5%. Percentage of registered serious organized crime project investigations. The achievement 2011-12 was 52.27%. The planned target was 31% of projects to be successfully terminated. The actual achievement for 2012-13 was 44.07%. The target was exceeded by 13.07%. For the number of serious commercial related cases investigated where officials are involved, including procurement fraud and corruption, the 2011-12 achievement was 57 cases that were investigated. For 2013, it was planned an additional 50 cases to be investigated. The actual achievement is 89 cases. The target was exceeded by 39 cases. Number of serious commercial related quarterly cases where officials are involved, including including procurement, fraud and corruption. The 2011-12 was 24 quarterly cases. The planned target was 25 quarterly cases. The actual achievement was 34 cases, meaning that the target was exceeded by 9 cases. In terms of the value of assets restrained seized, where officials are involved in procurement, fraud and corruption related matters, the 2011-12 achievement was 588,822,000 rand. The planned target was 125 million rand of assets explained to seize. The actual achievement is 1,024,000,000. In terms of the deviation, the target was exceeded by 899 million. In terms of the major achievements, for the reporting period, 334 arrests were made for the possession of narcotics. The monetary value related to the arrest was 95,181,942 rand. Four suspects were also arrested for possession of equipment and chemicals used for manufacturing of mandrax tablets. Upon the seizure of these items, it was determined that the chemicals, that according to the forensic science laboratory, were sufficient to manufacture 60 million mandrax tablets with a street value of 241 million rand. All four accused pleaded guilty and were sentenced to 15 years imprisonment, of which 7 was suspended. the investigation of serious organized crime led to the confiscation of, and here, Madam Chair, there's just some figures that's on the presentation, there's here in the, they were in grants, so with conversion, it's actually 2,077.997 kilograms of cannabis. With the heroin, it's actually 9.1 kilograms of heroin. With the cat, it's 114.613 kilograms of cat. With the cocaine, it's 25.487 kilograms of cocaine. And it is 2,545 mandrax tablets, 531 excess tablets, 69.626 kilograms of crystal meth, and it's actually 0.079 kilograms of morphine and 20.07 kilograms of LSD. 41 clandestine laboratories were dismantled with an estimated value of 300,000 rand for each laboratory. In order to address the issue of illicit mining, a four-year operational plan has been developed and approved by all principals of relevant departments. Just want to add that on the illicit mining, that even within the police and with the provincial capacities, there was a further rollout of that plan. The critical need to focus on investigation of theft of copper cable, electricity and rail cable related crime that are seen by economists as a sabotage in the national infrastructure has resulted in 130 arrests. 14 individuals were convicted in this regard. Various investigations are being conducted with regard to the buying of stolen copper and the export thereof. The hijacking of trucks carrying copper and fraud committed by scrap metal dealers. The DPI investigation focused on species such as abalone and rhino poaching. During the reporting period, 104 persons were arrested and 49 were convicted in this regard. Various operations projects were conducted which yielded the following results. 1,872 charges of racketeering and 55 million rands worth of assets were restricted. Seizures of 20 rhino horns and 5.5 tons of ivory with 630 400 US dollars per rand must be on today. And 1,120,000 Vietnamese dong. 10 years imprisonment for rhino poacher, that's from Zimbabwe. A total of 46 years of imprisonment for 5 accused which smuggled abalone from the Eastern Cape to Mozambique. 1 accused at 18 years, and 2 accused 7 years, and 3 8 years, and accused 4 at 18 months, and accused 5 at 3 years. During the reporting period, from 13, government-related fraud and corruption at local government was an ongoing focus area for the directorate. A number of significant successes were achieved in respect of Operation Clean Audit. A total of 45 public officials were arrested, while 14 persons, that's 4 officials, 9 members of the public were found guilty on charges including fraud, corruption and money laundering. One accused was sentenced to 15 years direct imprisonment and another to 6 years. Thank you.
National Commissioner, I'm going to ask if we break for lunch now. We will take forensic services when we get back. They're pressurizing us and I'm really getting very irritated with this hotel. If you overbook and you overextend yourself and the people are paying for it, sort of pay the price, I'm not happy with it. So if we can break for lunch, lunch is just across the hall. And can we get back at 2:30? It gives us 45 minutes for lunch, please. Maybe we will arrange that they lock here so you can leave your stuff here.
Thank you.